Support for Boston Public Radio comes from the Peabody Essex Museum, presenting Ethiopia at the Crossroads, featuring illuminated manuscripts, metalwork, carvings, and works by contemporary Ethiopian artists. On view now. For tickets and more information, you can visit PEM.org.
And Eastern Bank, committed to helping people and businesses prosper by investing over $240 million in local charities since 1994. Eastern Bank. Join us for good. EasternBank.com. Member FDIC.
Ahead on Boston Public Radio, live from our GBH studio at the Boston Public Library, is legalizing prostitution really the answer to sex trafficking, particularly in the era of Me Too? It's a question Marjorie Egan raises in her Boston Globe column this morning. That's one we're raising with you. Then playwright Ryan Landry has come out of hibernation, finally. He joins us to talk about the Happy Place Instagram hellscape that's now in Boston, museums rejecting Sackler money, and his take on Joe Biden's touchy-feely approach to politics. Then at noon, Emily Rooney's here for her famous list of fixations and fulminations.
It's been 6 months since Massachusetts opened its first recreational marijuana shops, and the learning curve for the state has been steep. We'll talk to Steve Hoffman about what's working, what isn't, and what his advice is to Rhode Island Governor Gina Raimondo, who's pushing to legalize recreational marijuana. That and more is next on Boston Public Radio. I am Marjorie Egan. You're listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. It's Friday. We're broadcasting as we do every Friday from the WGBH studio at the Boston Public Library. Hey.
Hey, how are you? You know, speaking of the Boston Public Library, you see what's right outside the window? Are they called stanchions? What are they called?
I think so.
The barriers, whatever it is. The metal barriers that are set up for the marathon, which is just a week and a half away.
It
gets the excitement going. And by the way, as we have been the last couple of years since we've had a studio here, we will broadcast live from our GBH studio at the Boston Public Library on Marathon
Day.
One of our regulars,
Trenny Kuznarek, is running.
I know she is.
Very impressive.
It is very impressive. In any case, that's a week and a half from now today. Took someone high profile like Harvey Weinstein to get all of us talking about sexual harassment, misconduct, and abuse. And it's taken someone high profile like Bob Kraft to get us talking about sex trafficking. In the wake of his Orchids of Asia Day Spa scandal, there's been a lot of talk about legalizing prostitution. But is that really the best we can do? It's a question Marjorie asks in her terrific column in today's Boston Globe. So it's one we're going to ask you at 877-301-8970. Does legalizing something degrading make it okay? Instead of legalizing sex work, should we be looking at the demand? Should the people shopping around for illicit sex figure out another way to get their jollies, like, I don't know, a robot or an inflatable? And what about establishing healthy relationships? Or do men and women who want to enter the legal sex industry have a right to do what they want to do with their bodies? The number is 877-301-8970. So you obviously came down on the no side of legalization. What's your case in your column?
Well, in my case is what you're doing basically with legalizing prostitution is you're legalizing the debasement and degrading of women and other people. There are some other people, men and young boys and girls who do this too, but which is a whole other story. And we've been very slow to give women rights. You know, it wasn't until the 1970s, really, that we decided that it wasn't okay to beat up your wife, that became not a private matter in a marriage, but it became a legal matter in courts. That was the 1970s, mm-hmm. Not that long ago. When Anita Hill came along in the 90s, but much more, I would say, impactful, I hate that word, was now the Me Too movement. It was only now that we decided, you know what? If you're going to grab women's rear ends in the office and say, you better put out, or you're not going to get your promotion or your raise, whatever, you're going to get fired. It's only right now that we decided that. So I think we should take things a step further and look at what you're really saying when people say, let's legalize prostitution. And by the way, legalizing it has not turned out to be a very good option in places like Nevada where they have, or in other countries where they have, because it's the same degrading and debasement and violence in many cases that goes on.
Well, can I add to that? I'm sorry.
So the thing we should be doing is we should do what the Attorney General has done. Arrest the traffickers, arrest the men, arrest the Johns, put their faces and names in the newspaper. And you know what has worked in terms of decreasing the number of prostituted women?
Yeah, Bob Kraft.
Bob Kraft and arresting Johns.
We're talking about the notion of legalizing prostitution. I have to say I have flipped my position on this. I wasn't like a huge yes, but my assumption until something you mentioned a minute ago was that legalizing prostitution, and if in an ideal world it wouldn't exist, but my sense was it wasn't going to go away, so make it safer, healthier, regulate it, that sort of thing. And then I read, and this is just a couple of weeks ago, what you mentioned in passing a minute ago, is that research coming out of the countries in Western Europe that have legalized prostitution suggests that it not only has not reduced the demand for illegal prostitution, it's increased it. That once it becomes legal, demand becomes such more widespread that demand for women, primarily women, becomes even greater. So they found in those countries that the incidence of illegal prostitution, unhealthy, the unhealthiest of them all for everybody involved, has actually increased. So, my attitude, my hesitancy remains, we're not going to eliminate the problem no matter what we do. So legalizing may make sense, but then the experience in Western Massachusetts, if I had a vote on this as a legislator today, I would vote no, based on the case you make in your piece and based on that little bit of research that I finally came upon a couple of weeks ago.
The other thing that really, I interviewed a lot of women this week that are survivors of prostitution.
I saw you did. It's great.
And the vast majority of women who become prostitutes are exploited by somebody. I talked to this one woman, Darlene Pollack, who came from a very troubled family. She had been sexually abused by her father, and she was trafficked starting at the age of 14. And you get kind of a Stockholm syndrome thing going on, where you have these men that you think are friends that turn you out to become a prostitute, and then they start controlling you. So most of these women come from foster care system or very difficult situations. There's sex workers that talk about, well, we need to have a union, we need to be free to be able to do this, and there's certain feminists that thinks, they're sex-positive feminists, and we should have the right to do these things with our body. But I think it's kind of a myth that you can last long being some dilettante prostitute on the weekends to make a little extra money while you're in college. I just don't think it works out that way in very many situations.
Right, there may be some, but they're the outliers. By the way, one last thing before you take calls. I mentioned this when we were discussing with somebody last week. The film, a friend of ours did, Mary Mazzio, former Olympic rower, former big-time lawyer downtown, called I Am Jane Doe, is a wonderful piece about sex trafficking and what the real world is like for young women. I would urge you to order it and watch it, and it's great. I think it played at the White House, actually, during Barack Obama days. Our number is 877-301-8970. What's that?
You know, before we get to the calls, we've got a couple of great emails already. Christopher says, the state becomes the pimp when you legalize a prostitution, which is an interesting way to put it. Robert says, legalizing prostitution is really legalize prostituting women, which is another great way to put it. And Kitty talks about this Nordic model that lots of people talk about, where they arrest the Johns and the pimps. But she said it's not sex work. It's still exploitation, violence, and sexism at its very worst. It's just really treating women as things and objects. And that's not...
Well, you know what the troubling... You praise Maura Healey, as you should, for going after the sex traffickers. And by the way, her predecessor, I think, was doing that Martha Coakley. But you know what's so disappointing, and I don't know the backstory out of this thing in Florida, is the whole case was about sex trafficking. The whole case, I don't think, was to bring misdemeanors against rich men, some of whom are famous, like Robert Kraft, some of whom are not so famous, but are loaded. Where are the sex trafficking charges? And I'm assuming...
That's a very good question.
But I'm assuming it's pretty... There are a lot of women who are needed to testify, or probably pretty scared about testifying for some of the same reasons you said. In any case, the issue of the moment is, should prostitution be legalized? Marjorie comes down strongly in the no column in today's Boston Globe. You should read her piece. Maria in Cambridge, you're first on Boston Public Radio. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I feel very strongly that... Hello?
Sure, you're on.
I feel very strongly that... I feel strongly that we need to have prostitution legalized. I don't know. I think it's very kind of patriarchal to say women can't do these things with their own bodies. And I understand that there's another part to it where people are you know, that women become prostitutes for various reasons, but that's a whole other issue. I feel like women should be able to do what they want with their bodies. We can address the other issues like TIMS and all that if it's a legalized issue.
Maria, you've said twice we can address the other issue. That is the issue.
Right.
When you say it's patriarchal, the patriarchal part of this are the pimps. I mean, if you can separate the notion. What do you mean, no? There are men who are exploiting this women. You're acting as if they're two separate universes, this whole universe of women who have made independent choices. And then over there in the corner are the pimps who are forcing these women into virtual slavery. So I don't think you can make that distinction.
You can make the distinction, because what is actually forcing women into that position is the government that makes it illegal for women to do these things, what they want with their body. That's the patriarchal part of it. We don't have laws against men, you know, using their body parts to play baseball or, you know, but for some reason, and I think it's a puritanical thing, we've decided, the government has decided that women, that they're going to control women's bodies this way.
Well, Maria, no one is telling women they can't do whatever they want with their bodies. What they're saying by making prostitution illegal is you cannot sell your body. You can't be paid and put in that position. You can't sell lots of things. You can't sell body parts. You can't sell organs. It's the selling part that's the problem. So do whatever you want. Have at it. But when you exchange money, that crosses a line. Lots of things we can't sell, Maria.
You can get the final word, Maria.
I think that, you know, we're all about selling body parts in this country. You know, baseball players sell their bodies. Everybody, but for some reason, there's a kind of part of this that because women need to, people need to control women's bodies, we're saying, no, those parts of the bodies we're not allowed to sell. You know, what if a woman is a really good prostitute? What if, you know,
Maria, can I make one last patriarchal suggestion? I would drop the baseball comparison.
I don't think it works,
if
Maria.
I were you. But Maria, thank you for your impassioned argument. We appreciate it.
Hold up.
877-301-8970 is our number. I'm sorry.
You know, one of the reasons it doesn't hold up we adore athletes in the United States of America. We think that they're wonderful. As the Attorney General said, and as most anybody would say, no one wants their little girl to grow up to become a prostitute. No one who's a little girl wants to grow up to become a prostitute, because let's just think for 2 seconds what you're mostly doing as a prostitute. You don't get to control what goes on in that transaction. The John gets to control what goes on in that transaction. So you're so, and when you talk about places like the Bunny Ranch in Nevada, it's not like you get to decide what goes on in that room. He buys you, and then you do what he wants you to do.
877-301-8970 is our number. Joe in Dorchester, you're next on Boston Public Radio. Hi.
Hi. This is convenient because I agree completely with what Maria was just saying. I think she made excellent points. You indicate that the difference is that prostitutes are looked down on and baseball players are admired.
I didn't say that at all.
I said
the
that.
Average 40-year-old baseball player, ex-baseball player, is in a little better life shape than the average 40-year-old woman who's had to go into prostitution. And I think if you're suggesting otherwise, it is just, with all due respect, Joe, sort of mindless purity. I mean, the facts are the facts.
Well, the millions of dollars make
but go ahead, Joe.
Too.
Well, not every baseball player is $1 million.
Yeah, but a lot of them make big
but
money.
But go ahead, Joe. I'm sorry.
Well, the guys in the minors barely make a pittance, and many times they suffer and get kicked out of the game like a prostitute who's been used and discarded by a pimp.
You know, Joe, can you stop there for a second?
Oh,
you got Joe.
Oh,
Joe, are you kidding?
God.
So you're a 35-year-old man who didn't make it in the pros, and God, you have to actually go get a real job, as opposed to a woman who's been used and disposed of by a pimp. With all due respect, it's fine to have your position, but to compare two of you in a row, the life of a baseball player to the life of a trafficked woman is just surreal to me. But go ahead.
Thank you for keeping an open mind. As a matter of fact, Jim, I've had jobs in my life where I did manual labor, where people paid me for things that I didn't want to do, where I did have to use my body for things that were uncomfortable, or in many cases I was exposed to materials that weren't particularly healthy.
Yeah.
I worked for people that I didn't like. It was legal for them to be rageaholics. It was legal for them to give me tests that in some cases skirted the law but didn't necessarily break it. I would never claim that I have suffered anything on the level of a trafficking victim. But when you seem to go into this with the basic assumption that anyone who participates in any sexual activity, as soon as there's money involved, it's degrading. I can tell you that I've done, and I think people who've worked in restaurants and sewers and garbage trucks would say that they've done some pretty degrading things for money. So,
got it. All right, Joe, thank you. We appreciate your phone call. 877-301-8970.
Again, manual labor and prostitution, they're worlds apart to me. A lot of us have done manual labor, chambermaids, you know, working on construction.
But the point that Joe makes, I mean, you know, workers shouldn't be in a situation where there are horrible chemicals that they are susceptible to.
That's absolutely true.
There are degrees of abuse.
There are degrees, and this is, I would say, in a different category than manual labor.
But that shouldn't be allowed either.
No, it shouldn't. It shouldn't.
Tim in Boston. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Jim, you brought up a point referencing something Marjorie had said about how where they legalize this stuff, the incidence of, I guess, illegal prostitution actually goes up.
Yep, that's what I read.
I would like to just point out something that I've read about that point is you're actually, when you legalize it, you incentivize reporting. So it may not be a fair comparison to bring into this debate. Just my thought.
Okay. I would urge you, I think it's a decent point, I would urge you to read some of the stories about studies that have been done in Western Europe, and I would assume they control for what you're raising, but it may be a decent point, Tim, but continue. I'm sorry.
No, that was my only
point. Okay.
But while I'm here, criticizing points, I think the baseball stuff is weird, too. Maybe you can make an analogy to, like, college sports, because they're not paid as well as these millionaires.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You're right to say that professional sports and, you know, doing yard work, they're not really comparable.
Tim,
but college sports now, that's something that's interesting.
Tim, thank you for your call as well.
I find the whole star athlete and prostitute comparison bizarre. Am I missing
something?
Well,
what was the first woman's name? Was it Maria? She wasn't. I don't think she was talking about star athletes. She was talking about baseball players. In general, I would say the worst situation a baseball player in is probably a little bit better than the best situation that a sex trafficked woman is in.
Professional athletes are incredibly talented and skilled and can do something that very few people can do.
No, I don't think she just said star athletes. She said baseball players. Baseball players.
Well, what are you talking about?
I was a baseball player, too.
We're talking about
except
high
I couldn't hit a ball.
High school boys?
I don't know. I'm not them. I'm just reflecting on what they had to say. But by the way, you know, just even though I've been hard on some of these callers, again, if you had asked me a month ago or 2 months ago prior to this craft thing, based upon what I thought I knew, I would probably have leaned towards legalization also, not for these kinds of reasons, not because of the patriarchy or whatever
well,
it is,
again,
because I thought it would make it safer for women.
Nikki Bell,
and reduce the illegal part of it.
Nikki Bell, who's also a survivor of prostitution, who runs a place in Central Mass that helps women get over it, says, think about a person, your spouse or someone you're in love with. Think about having sex with them 8 to 10 times a day. And then think about doing that with a total stranger who probably doesn't think much of you or of women and may want a lot of weird stuff that he can't get at home. Think about that. And think about what that does to your psyche and what that does to your ability to function, which is why so many of these women end up on drugs.
You know, by the way, can I make a suggestion? Even though the lines are full, if one of the people on the line wants to bring up the baseball analogy again, I think you will listen to Marjorie's head pop off on live radio, which I don't think has ever happened before, but we're really close. So
maybe we're talking about Little League. You know, maybe we're talking about a kid who can barely run
whatever
for first
we're talking
or second
about.
Base.
Well, a couple of people agreed. It wasn't just Maria. The next caller agreed as well.
Well, but I think there's a lot of people who want to prettify this up, and perhaps because they want to take advantage of legalized prostitution as well, because there are thousands of men, again, according to the Attorney General, that sit at their computers at work and make days for themselves online with prostitutes.
Did Maura Healey tell us it was 9,000 a day in Greater Boston or something? Like thousands.
So it's a lot of people have an incentive to want this kind of thing, I guess, because then they can do it without worrying about their wives finding out or something like that. Anyway, we're talking about legalized prostitution, asking you if this is the best we can do when it comes to sex trafficking. And that conversation continues on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan, broadcasting live from our GBH studio at the Boston Public Library. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about Marjorie's column in the Boston Globe today, which asks if we should legalize prostitution, if that's a solution to sex trafficking. Marjorie, in her column, says, if you've been listening or if you read it, a big fat no. What about you? 877-301-8970.
Let's go to Linda in Franklin. Hi, Linda.
Hi, it's a pleasure to talk to both of you.
Thanks.
I'm a first-time caller.
Oh, thank you.
I totally agree with Margie, and I believe to conquer prostitution, we need to raise our sons to be respectful to women, because when you have a man who respects a woman, they will not want to have to go pay. They would like to become friends with a woman, get to know her, to have the sexual relationship. So it's a task that our society has to do to make prostitution go away.
You know, someone a couple of weeks
said
ago
said
it. Yeah, that's great.
Linda, I'm so glad you called because you said it better than I have. That's kind of what it's about. It's not respecting women and treating them as objects. And you know what was an incredible thing that Nikki Bell, a prostitution survivor, pointed out to me? That when Robert Kraft offered his apology for what happened in the day spa in Florida, he apologized, and this is a quote, to my family, my close friends, my coworkers, our fans, and many others who have rightfully held me to a higher standard. He apologized to everybody except the women in the Orchids Asia Day Spa, which says something, despite his claims for having huge respect for women. He either forgot about the women in the day spa or he didn't think them worthy of an apology. So you're right, Linda. That says something about his respect for them.
Linda, you still there?
Yes, I am. I have children.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I have three children, and I think 30 years ago I would have thought maybe I'll legalize it. But now with children, it changes your perspective because I have two daughters, and I could not imagine any of them wanting to give sex away for a payment or whatever. Like Margie said, it takes a piece of your soul. So I just hope we can do something as a society.
Now, Linda, since it was a very thoughtful call, before you go, do you think we should ban baseball as well, or what do you think?
Absolutely not.
Okay, I just wanted to be clear. Linda, thank you for really... That's not fair, Jim, to ask that question. Linda, thank you for a really thoughtful call. We appreciate it. 877-301-8970. By the way, the culture, I mean, that is the most important point. You know what the problem with it is? Someone said something similar to us. Maybe it was Maura Healey, I'm not sure, a week or two ago when we were discussing this. The problem is that is not, doesn't, that's a long-term kind of proposition. It's sort of like when we discuss guns. We've got to change the mindset about weapons in this country, but that's not something you do by just changing a law or making a pronouncement, you know.
Let's go to Karen in Boston. Hi, Karen.
Or Karen. Is it Karen?
Oh, Karen. I'm sorry.
It's Karen. Hi, it's Karen.
Karen. Hi, Karen. Thanks for calling. What's up?
Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate that you're tackling a very, very difficult thing, and I just have a couple of things. The issue, I can see really strong arguments on both sides, and you're getting them from people who are taking a very strong position, like Margie's position, and a strong position like Maria's position. But a couple of things that we're not thinking about. One of them is, why do women go to be prostitutes in the first place? What about hunger? What are we doing more about making sure people have enough food? Because maybe some of these women prostitute themselves so they have a place, something to eat, some money to eat. Maybe some women prostitute themselves. When I worked for Ned Call in the Reclamation Corps in the 1960s in West Hartford, We went to the Sin Street Jail to try and help the women who were prostitutes.
Hey, Karen, can I interrupt you only to say this is a horrible connection, and so I'm afraid we're going to lose you. So can you sort of wrap up? And I don't mean that disrespectfully. I mean worried the connection's so bad. But go ahead.
Hunger, why people go into prostitution, and compare the issue of prostitution with alcohol. Look at the problems we have had in this country with trying to ban alcohol, we're trying to legalize alcohol. We still have alcoholism as a disease and drunkenness, and also people love to drink. So you'll get both sides of the argument. Thank you for taking
Karen,
my call.
Thank you. We really appreciate your calling. Thank you. And I'm sorry we had to dump you earlier than we would have otherwise. 877-301.
Well, a couple of our producers are making the same argument that if often LGBT people and homeless people engage in survival sex to survive. But again, I mean, is this the best we can do?
No, it's what the woman who just called, the best we can do. I mean, it's the same reason a lot of people commit.
Transgender
a lot
people.
Of people commit crimes because of hunger and need to take care of their families. It's not a defense, but it says that maybe we don't deal with underlying needs. And if we did as a society, we maybe wouldn't have to have people resort to behavior they'd prefer not to engage in, you know?
Let's go to Diane. We're going to Diane in Fairhaven. I guess she's next.
Hi, Diane. Diane, we'll get to you in a second.
Hello.
Hi, welcome. Hello.
Okay.
Hi, you're on.
Oh, hi. My feeling about it is, hold on. Sorry, took you off speaker. If we legalize it, that will have to create another big bureaucracy in order to, supervise it. And all that money could be spent helping these marginalized people who go into prostitution because they have no other choices. And I just think the money would be better spent helping those who need it rather than paying for what would end up being a corrupt bureaucracy, because I can't even imagine, you know, the prostitute needs to pass the medical test, but they don't. So the person might, you know, give them a license if, you know, for favors. I just don't think it's a good idea.
Diane, thank you for your call. We appreciate it.
Well, you know, we know that if you arrest Johns, and the more you arrest Johns, the less likely they are to risk being exposed or risk finding their bosses, finding them out that this is what they're doing, or their colleagues that may not want to sit next to them anymore, and all this kind of stuff. You know, it used to be the joke was kind of, okay, there'd be some big sting, and the cops would come, and they'd say to the Johns, go home to your family, and then they'd arrest the women. So we're switching that now. We're realizing that it's better to arrest the Johns and not the women and try to help the women.
Do you not think along those lines, do you not think that post the Bob Kraft story, which obviously is a huge national story, maybe bigger here, but it is a national story, do you not think that that the patronage of such establishments has gone down precipitously? I would bet.
Yes.
I haven't seen any research, but common sense would suggest that that would be the consequence.
Well, if you think you go to one of these spas and you think there's a 50-50 chance there might be a camera watching what you're doing, and then your wife might find out, you know, might give you a second thought. And I think that's what you've seen in prostitution over and over again, that when people get caught. I remember years ago they put a bunch of guys in the Brockton Enterprise.
I remember that very well,
Johns.
Too. I do.
I mean, you know what hit the fan.
But by the way, it's not just around prostitution. You and I have argued strongly for perp walks for a lot of these corporate criminals, like in 2008, and it was not just out of a desire to be sadistic to see people suffer. The conventional wisdom is if the average corporate executive who is a criminal decides all he or she has to do when caught is pay a fine that's not even their money, there's no incentive to act right.
Right.
If one of your colleagues is on the evening news in an orange jumpsuit walking into prison or into a hearing, the likelihood is good you'll think twice. So I think it applies. I mean, a disincentive is a pretty important thing.
And the same thing with Me Too. I mean, I think men who might be inclined to grab somebody's rear end at the water cooler are less likely to do it now because they've watched famous, powerful men lose their jobs. They don't want to lose their jobs, so they're not going to do it. I mean, as it is now, there's almost no consequence because you're very unlikely to get caught. The sheriff down there from Florida wrote a great piece in the Globe saying that the percentage of men who get caught and prosecuted is tiny, tiny, tiny. Anyway, do we have time for
any
more?
For one or two more quick ones.
Brendan in the car. Hi, Brendan.
Hello, Brendan.
Hey, Jim and Marjorie, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I've heard the comparison made that legalizing prostitution is akin to legalizing marijuana, you know, this argument that it's been around for a long time and it's going to continue to be around for a long time, but I just don't buy it. You know, there's not little boys and girls being sold into slavery to sell marijuana. So I think it's a very different topic. And my personal opinion is that the law should be very, very harsh on johns and traffickers, in traffickers in particular. I mean, I think if you're engaged in human trafficking, you should get life in prison. Maybe that's a little harsh, but that's just my opinion. However, I think the law should be very lenient for women and men who find themselves in this line of work out of desperation.
You know, by the way, I mean, and I hope no one, Brendan, disagrees with the notion of prosecuting the traffickers, but I assume we're going to read at some point, unless the prosecutors in that Florida county where this craft thing happened are frauds, and I'll give them the benefit of the doubt at the moment, I assume they wanted to bring sex trafficking cases, but the story may ultimately come out that despite their desire, it's a lot harder to build that kind of case with scared women, probably in this country illegally, who are needed to testify, I would guess. So in the abstract, I totally agree with you, but it appears we should ask Maura Healey about how hard it is to build one of these cases next time she is here. But beyond that, I'm with you, Brendan, and thank you very much for the phone call.
James is giving us the Buddhist perspective on this.
Oh, I was looking for that.
Yes, he says, sex, from the Buddhist perspective, sex can lead to problems when it dehumanizes someone. Dehumanizing others is what leads to abuse, and prostitution seems to have this inherent trait. I think that's a very great point. And, you know, when people say prostitution has been around forever, well, wife beating has been around forever. It doesn't mean we should say... let's just let these guys beat up their wives. It's a real evolution. As I said before, mistreating women has been around for as long as women have been in the workforce. Doesn't mean we should say it's okay.
So can we end this by where we started? Could you describe your reaction to the baseball analogy for people? Because our first two callers did make that analogy to being a prostitute and a baseball player.
Yeah.
How would you respond to that one more time?
Well, I would say being a good baseball player
is something
many people aspire to.
They
just
do.
Had this whole scandal where people have been lying about their children's athletic skills, mm-hmm. these rich people, to get their kids into these great schools. So I would say generally we admire athletes
we do, yeah.
in the United States.
But mostly
and
we
if you're
do,
a
yeah.
talented athlete, you can stand to become a very wealthy person
yeah, you can.
with your talent. So I don't really see the analogy mm-hmm. between... being a star athlete and being a prostitute. I just don't see it.
Okay. Thanks for your calls. By the way, read Marjorie's column. It's at bostonglobe.com. Even better, go buy the newspaper. Marjorie's column is in today's paper.
Thank you for advertising my column.
Well, by the way,
Jim.
It's a really good column. You're a pretty good writer, Marjorie.
Thank you.
You're actually one of the best writers on the planet.
Oh, my goodness.
No, you really are.
You.
You're a fabulous columnist.
Boy, I'm not going to say any. I'm not going to make fun of you all day long.
You do that every... I know what you're going to say in the next segment, so
okay.
See if you can keep that pledge for 5 minutes rather than for
Ryan
5 hours.
Ryan Landry is up next
Where
with
the
us.
Hell has
he's
he
come
been?
Out of hibernation, apparently. He's back from wherever he's been for his take on Joe Biden, the emissions scandal, and a lot more. You're listening to 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio, live from our WGBH studio at the Boston Public Library. Oh, what an outfit Ryan's wearing, too.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie, and live from our GVH studio at the Boston Public Library. It's time for You Get the Picture. Ryan Landry's recurring, even though it hasn't been recurring much lately, but it will be now, his segment of social observations. Ryan Landry is a playwright, a lyricist, an actor, and founder of the Gold Dust Orphans Theatrical Company. Where the hell you been, Ryan?
Have been in New Orleans, and let me tell you something. I am as big as a house because I've done nothing but eat.
Oh,
eat,
wow.
Eat.
Were you down there for Mardi Gras?
Oh, yeah.
Was it wild?
Honey. Oh, God. You know, I think I'm still hungover from Mardi Gras.
So everybody like sachets up and down the street with their cocktails?
Oh, I was rolling in the street. You know?
So...
The rats were getting
down
out
there?
Of my way.
What were you doing? Were you writing down there?
Yeah, writing my new play, The Ebonic Woman.
Ebonic Woman.
Yeah, you've heard of The Bionic Woman. Well, here comes The Ebonic okay. Woman, and she is out to save the world. And Trump is the arch villain.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's been in jail for 10 years, mm-hmm. and he gets out, and he has to disguise himself, so he turns into an arch villain called Bald Eagle.
Bald Eagle,
yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, and he decides he's going to cage... all his ex-supporters who turned on him, he's going to cage them. And, of course, all the Democrats complete Armageddon. Like, not Armageddon hungry, Armageddon like death.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, when are we going to see this, by the way? When's
this opens May 2nd.
Oh, May 2nd?
You
oh,
know
I didn't
it,
know it's that soon.
Oh, yeah, honey. We're in the dances are happening. The songs are hitting. It's going to be fantastic. I can't wait for this one. And you know, it may very well be the last show we do at Machine after 25 years.
I know, because they're going to throw
you
out of there.
Oh, they sold it for more yuppie housing.
But wait a second, Archie, didn't you tell us last time we saw you that there's the Lithuanian Hall or
something?
Yeah,
the Lithuanian Club in Southie wants to host us, but you know, it comes with a lot of things. I love the idea because people can have pierogies and then come upstairs and fart their way through my show.
It's beautiful.
That's wonderful.
That's beautiful. Yeah. That's what I've always wanted to do, actually. So that'd be a great opportunity.
You did it the last time you were there. Don't
so I hesitate to ask you about our last discussion because I had the feeling
do
I know
ask
what you're going to say.
Yeah.
About legalizing prostitution. You're
absolutely
going to tell me it's a great. I knew he'd say that.
We're both
because
against
I used to be a hooker. I was a
you
hooker
were,
for
right?
years. Oh God, for years. It wasn't that I was the prettiest one. I would just sit there and listen. You know, in some of those
to people's travails, you mean?
Oh yeah. There was this one guy that when I was hooking, he never wanted to have sex. What he wanted me to do was go with him to horror movies like the Slumber Party Massacre and stuff. And we would sit in like the middle of the rows and then he would sit there and he'd watch as everything happened and he would just go like this. And I would and all the people around us would leave the movie theater, and I thought it was hilarious.
But why? I assume you're not as scarred as some, I would guess.
I'm very scarred. I think that the problem with prostitution, it really screwed me. Thank God I found love in my life. You know, I've been with him for 25 years, but it did mess me up with love and the idea of it and stuff. I think it really did scar me in that way. But it was something that I had to do. You
so
know,
why
to
are you
school.
Okay with legalization then?
Because I think you should legalize anything you can't control. I think you.
Do you think it's different?
War on drugs.
Yep.
There's no such thing. People are going to do drugs.
They are going to do drugs.
Legalize prostitution or don't. There will always be prostitution, the world's oldest profession.
But as I just said, there'll always be wife beating, and we've decided we're not going to allow that.
But no. You're with him on drugs, by
the way.
Wait a minute,
Marjorie. You just said we decided we're not going to allow that. Of course, it should not be allowed. But it will happen.
It will continue
to happen.
But let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Do you think it's different? Because I do, but I'm not a gay man.
Yeah.
Is it different?
You're not?
No, I'm not. Is it different?
All this time.
For a woman or a gay man? Because I kind of
I don't know.
It
All
might
I know is I needed
different.
Money to get through school. I was at School of Visual Arts in New York, and I had no money. And, you know, my parents, we all grew up in a trailer park. So I had to get some dough. So I started hooking. And I don't know if a gay man, because for me, I've never been one of those like people like, I came out of the closet. Aren't I fantastic?
Yeah.
I just was I was me the entire time. And it's quite nice being me.
We're talking to Ryan Lander. We sort of like you as you are, too.
Thank you.
You know, another current event thing. We've been talking a lot. We're going to talk to Emily Rooney about it in another 15 minutes.
Oh, Emily,
or so.
Is she on her way in here?
She will be on her way in
All
here.
Right.
What's your take on the whole Joe Biden kerfuffle of the last couple of
weeks?
Well,
you know, I don't know. I mean, I have a lot of people in my theater company, right, and boys and girls. And I do kiss them on the head and hug them and, like, so happy to see them and stuff. And I cherish those moments, those slight moments, because we don't know. We're hurtling towards the sun. God knows if we're going to be dead tomorrow.
But wait a second. They're your coworkers and friends whom you know.
Well, aren't these people?
No.
Okay.
No.
So tell me more about it. I mean, I'm uninformed.
The woman who was running for lieutenant governor in Nevada had never met him before he walks up behind
her and
starts smelling her hair. There's a great piece in the Washington Post
today. Okay, well, that's
by this woman.
Ouch.
Did you read the piece by the woman in the Washington Post? Who he meets her, she's a survivor, and to show his support, he holds her hands and goes forehead to forehead.
Yeah, I did read that story.
So that's a totally different animal.
I think you're right there, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the end of that?
Yeah.
Okay,
well, no, it's not really the end of it. You know, I'm never going to agree with you totally, Jim. That's why I'm on this show.
We're really glad you're back, though.
Thank you.
Now, the thing I did want to talk to you about, I want to talk to you about all these things. I had never heard of The Happy Place.
Listen, I am so It's infuriating.
What this is?
Yeah.
Well, why don't you describe what it is before you tell us why you're infuriated, and then you can tell us.
No, you describe it, okay, and here then it is. I'll do the reaction.
I have to say, until I read the piece by Murray White, who I never heard of.
Beautifully written.
Do you know who Murray White is?
No.
Murray White is a writer for the Boston Globe. Yeah. And I assume I don't even know if it's a man or a woman. Murray White wrote a piece about how something that bills itself, this is a happy place, is the most Instagrammable place in America. Apparently, it already exists in Los Angeles, Chicago, and Toronto.
Of course it
does. It is either has opened or is about... Oh, it's opening Friday today in a former Marshalls at 500 Boylston. And essentially, you go into these rooms, I guess. You go into these rooms. A room might be something like a Don't Worry, Be Happy room, which is suspended from the ceiling in glowing letters. Another room with balls like at a McDonald's where you just jump into them. And you take pictures of yourself or have someone take pictures. And then theoretically they go on Instagram. I have to say, this sounds like one of the most narcissistic, demented things ever.
Well, first of all, the idea of full-grown adults going to the McDonald's, like ball jumping trampoline thing. It's like basically we refuse to we are becoming adult babies. We are such we're like infants. You know, next we're going to have bottles with nipples on them, you know.
You're at least half right.
That's what we're going to have for lunch.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so sickening. And the idea of people wanting to show that they're having experiences that they're not really having. Now, for instance,
that's exactly the point. By the way,
they want to believe they've touched something that they've never touched. I would love it if they went into one of these rooms and they had the big giant letters of happy and they posed and then all the letters came down crashing on them and killed them. That would be wonderful. That's something
I could
see
that in a play with a gold orphans. Actually,
I don't know if Ryan knows about the time Jim got stuck in the ball. Okay,
no,
in the ball pit.
We told the story a few months.
I don't want to hear about his sex life.
No,
they had to have the jaws of life come in and pull him out by the butt.
Well, you know, whenever you start something like that, you have to finish
the
story. They
used to call Jim the jaws of life.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you. Let's leave that at that. I'm going to tell a 30-second version of this since you opened it up.
It was
great. Counting the seconds.
Oh, I wish Marjorie could have been there for that.
I have young kids. Marjorie had young kids. This is like 18 years. Whenever shortly after we met, and we're talking about a show we're doing. I don't even know if we were doing the radio yet. We were doing that.
I wasn't even there
cable
with you.
Get to the point, Jim.
Oh, I take it back. You were not. So I'm at a Burger King on Route 1. I take it back.
Yes,
you weren't there.
I have been to the Burger King on Route 1.
Mistake number one. Burger King on Route 1.
My younger daughter, who is then about a year and a half years old, crawls into this huge maze-like thing outside the Burger King.
And what were you doing now, watching her?
Watching her, and she gets to the middle of it, and there's a spider in the middle of it. And she gets totally freaked out and starts screaming and crying. Like any good father, you can relate to this.
Yeah.
Any good father, after it's clear that she will try to cause her, I held up like a chicken McNugget in the hopes that she would come get it. She didn't do that.
Hold it.
What?
This is like something out of The Simpsons.
What?
Your daughter crawls into one of those McDonald's balls.
It was actually a Burger King.
Burger King. Sees a spider.
Freaks
and
out.
And you hold up a chicken McNugget to call her back.
Yes. Yeah, that hot mustard.
What's your daughter's name? Spot?
Yeah, exactly. Like a dog.
So
exactly.
In any case, well, regardless, I tried that. I held up, I don't know if it was a McNugget, whatever it was,
Judging Joe Biden.
So I held this thing up in the hopes that she'd come out. She did not. And what I decided to do, like any good father, Ryan Landry,
like any good father,
I crawled into the space.
Because you wanted to be in there yourself.
Well, it was very tight, and the problem was...
Very tight.
When I got near her, she decided to crawl out the other end, which was good, because she then got out. The problem was I was heavier at that particular time.
You were trapped.
And my rather ample, whatever you might want to call it, got stuck.
Your ass.
So thank you. So I am stuck in the middle of this ball thing. 6'5"
Oh,
now see, that's 260
pounds.
Exactly. Wouldn't that be great? That would be in the happy face page. What I would have
one
given
the most humiliating
to be near that
experiences
day
of my whole life.
Kind of
so go ahead,
really
Jim.
Something.
Tell us how you got out.
No.
Look at Jim.
I didn't know.
Jim stuck in the ball pit.
I don't remember how I got out, but you know what the happy part of the story
What's
was?
The happy part?
I got to eat the chicken McNuggets.
Oh, there you go.
It's terrific.
There you go. Okay.
That's your punchline.
You know, by the way, can I tell you something?
Yeah.
Your point, which I don't know if they make in this, Murray White makes in the story, maybe he or she does, is the most important point. They're trying to create a phony experience where there isn't a real one. That's exactly right. And that is very thoughtful and insightful.
Well, it's like a lot of Facebook in general. You know, everybody always having these wonderful times.
Yeah,
all these
parties. I've heard this a lot. So the idea of, like, we have to build our lives to look like a certain way, and even if it's not real, as long as people believe that it's real, or, you know, that
sort of
thing.
And then you get depressed.
Yeah.
Like everybody else.
I mean, I guess, you know what? I'm guilty of that, too, because, you know, when I'm doing the plays and stuff, I mean, I'm pulling my hair out trying to get it all done. I'm spending $60,000 to get the show up and all this stuff. And then I'm wondering if I'm going to make my money back. And, of course, I'm, like, crying at night, you know. But on Facebook, it's like, come see our new hit show. You know,
exactly.
It's like you don't really show the
part. Can I just finish the story, this Burger King story.
Oh, you're going to go back to that?
Does Jason Tureska even work on our show anymore? No. And he just types on our screen, you were like a big Jewish Winnie the Pooh. That is... It's not that funny, Ron. Thank you.
I think it's hilarious.
Okay. I said I wasn't going to make fun of you, and here I am making fun of you.
We're talking to Ryan Landry from the Gold Dust Orphans.
Listen to this. You know this whole terrible story
about... Him and Piglet go in search of the best borscht.
That's a good one, too.
Oh, my Lord. Okay, go on. But you're not going to get borscht at Burger King. Go ahead,
Marjorie.
No, we're
talking about these parents, Lori Loughlin and Felicity Huffman.
Oh, that bunch.
In court yesterday, or was it the day before?
A couple of days ago,
yeah. When they were trying, because they're trying to get the kids into colleges. Listen to this story. This is how far this thing has gone.
Yeah.
There's this really snazzy school that...
snazzy.
The Obama...
That's what, you know, Marjorie, I love you so much.
Snazzy.
You still use words like snazzy.
I do. At least I don't use groovy. At least I've stopped doing
that. No, I like groovy, actually. Oh, is this for me?
Oh, my God.
Look at this. Cake. Someone brought cake.
Who is that on?
Thank you.
Wow.
It's from the Newsfeed Cafe for Ryan?
Oh, thank you,
Newsfeed Cafe.
Thank you,
we just got delivered mountains of fruit and
so,
cake, and thank you, Newsfeed.
There's a snazzy prep school in Washington, D.C. called the Sidwell. Well, actually, it's Bethesda. I don't know where the heck it is. It's
Sidwell
near
Friends?
Washington. I don't know if it's Bethesda.
That's where all the
D.C.
presidential kids
went. The Obama kids went there. Chelsea Clinton went there. All the elite of Washington, D.C.
What about it?
Well, in line with this obsession with getting your kids into college schools, the guidance counselor had to send out this notice to the parents of the class of 2019 saying, we will no longer answer phone calls from blocked numbers or open any mail without a recognizable return address because parents were calling the guidance counselor's office to tattletale on the bad deeds of other children competing with their children to get into colleges. You know, they would call up and say that so-and-so was drunk at a party and they should have been thrown off the soccer team, or so-and-so, you know, didn't cheated on their math exam or something like that.
Brother.
Things have gotten so out of control. And the guidance counselor said, if any parent feels the need to inform me regarding the actions of a child who is not their own child, I will ask you to leave my office or end the phone conversation. Can you imagine that? They're sending in letters.
It's like an epidemic.
Yes.
It really is.
I think we've gotten to the point where now we believe, and I think this is very scary. It's a breakdown of civilization. We've gotten to the point where the only way to make it in this world is to be a barracuda. Mm-hmm. You know, cut, run, you know, grab yours and screw everyone else, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And trick your way to the top.
Well, I would amend that. I'd say either a barracuda or a big Jewish Winnie the Pooh. One of those two.
No, big Jewish Winnie the Pooh. I see. I would. The reason I think that's so funny is you are exactly that.
Thank you.
I really appreciate that. And you're not mean or anything.
Whatever.
You're a big Jewish Winnie the Pooh.
Whatever. So, you know, speaking of this, before he leaves, I thought you were going to go to the thing that...
What do you mean? Lori
Loughlin, who I can not tell a lie, but I never heard of until she was fired by Hallmark
neither,
and this stuff. Here she's on Fuller House, which I guess is on Hallmark, but she was originally on the 1990s Full House. We'll play a little sound. This is an episode.
Talk
this
about making the same mistake twice.
No kidding.
Be True to Your Preschool was the name of the episode.
Ugh.
In it, Lori Loughlin, who plays this character, Aunt Becky, get this, confesses that her husband, Uncle Jesse, embellished their son's preschool application. Here it is.
What's going on? I'm just checking out this application for Boughton Hall. I'm not going to lie on this application.
You got to give the boys a little edge.
And you're right.
Uh-huh.
I'm their father.
Darn right.
If I don't lie for them, who will?
You must have done a great job on that application. They're interested in Nikki and Alex.
I may have What's the word I'm looking for? I may have embellished. This is very important. You know, the fast track. Zoom. Zoom, 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 zoom.
Yeah, right. Okay, zoom. Zoom, 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 zoom. Look, Mrs. Jacobs, we have to be honest. Well, I have to be honest. We may have, well, he may have embellished, lied a bit on our application.
You got to say this, for the woman can act. Let me tell you.
She should have been arrested for that episode. Forget what she did with her kid.
But the reason she's signing autographs. Yeah. But you know what the best thing is to show
she's
how screwed up the culture is? She's walking into the courtroom. She had signed autographs. When she goes in the courtroom, she's shaking the hands of the prosecutors. But the best part is not her. The best part are the people outside the courthouse, some of whom are chanting, pay my tuition, pay my tuition. And other people are chanting, oh, my God, it's Lori Loughlin. This is the sickest culture
we can possibly imagine. There were pictures of her.
Everybody out there, please learn to forage for berries.
Because that's coming. It's coming apart.
The excrement is about to hit the fan.
Ryan, I noticed he's eating on the air, and he's doing it quite delicately.
Why are we not able to do that?
I don't know.
Because it's in front of me, and I'm not sharing.
No, I didn't mean that. Or when we eat on the air, actually, it's not as silent as you've obviously presumed.
People always complain about eating on the air.
So we only have a minute left. Can you give us a little? I didn't realize you had a play coming as soon as May 2nd. Is that what it is?
May 2nd, The Ebonic Woman. You can get your tickets at brownpapertickets.com. Let me tell you something. It's going to probably be the last show we do at Machine. We don't know if we're going to even exist after this because we don't have a place to go after this. So if you want to see the Golden Serpents, you better come to the Ebonic Woman. You get your tickets on brownpapertickets.com. You're going to love it. It's a study in racism and the whole thing, but it sounds as if it's going to be so, it's such a downer. It's absolutely wonderful. You're going to love it. It's hilarious and great, and the actors are brilliant, and you're going to just love it.
By the way, for those who have not seen the Golden Orphans, we've seen them a number of times. There is rarely as much of a fun evening as spending time at Machine watching Ryan and his band of merry gold dust orphans doing their thing. It is fabulous.
Well, it's better than holding a chicken McNugget from my daughter at a Burger King.
I think the Lithuanian Club will be fun. Is that the one on Boston Street?
It's in Southie.
Yeah, I think that'd be great.
Well, hopefully that'll work. Yeah.
I think so. I love pierogies.
Yeah, people, you got to come see
us. What's the website? One more time, we got to go. What's the website?
Brown, as in the color, brownpapertickets.com.
And by the way, you can put some of that cake in your pockets.
Are you going to leave this? Hey, when am I coming back? Hopefully next week.
We hope so. Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Ryan,
it's nice to see you, Ryan. We missed you.
Ryan Landry joins us regularly for You Get the Picture. He's a playwright, lyricist, actor, and founder of the Gold Dust Orphans Theatrical Company. Thank you very much, Ryan, for coming in. Coming up, Emily Rooney is here to regale us with her famous list of obsessions and observations. You're listening to 89.7 WGBH, and we are broadcasting live from our WGBH studio at the Boston Public Library.
Ahead on Boston Public Radio, live from our GVH studio at the Boston Public Library. Are the media going overboard on Joe Biden to compensate for all the years they went easy on him? At noon, Emily Rooney joins us for this, and she's bringing her famous list with her. Then it's on to Massachusetts. Has big weed come to the Bay State? One of the reasons for legalizing marijuana was to create economic opportunity for the residents of Massachusetts. So why is there already an emerging monopoly? Bless Steve Hoffman, chair of the Cannabis Control Commission, about this and more.
Uber is asking Massport to put the brakes on its plans to have rideshare services drop passengers off in a garage. We'll talk to Shirley Young about this, the latest out of the Gaming Commission's hearings, and the lessons from Mount Ida 1 year since it closed. Then we wrap things up with our Friday news quiz, a spring cleaning edition with two certified Con Marie consultants tidying up. That's next on Boston Public Radio. Marjorie Egan, you're listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. We are broadcasting live, as we do every Friday, from the Boston Public Library. Hello again, Jim.
Hello again, Marjorie. Joining us for a famous list of fixations and fulminations, the Rachel Rollins dispute with the Secretary of Public Safety, and more, is Emily Rooney, host of Beat the Press, which you can catch tonight at 7 o'clock. Hello, Emily Rooney.
Hey, Jim. Hey, Marge.
Hello, Emily Rooney. We're going to start, though, before we get to your list. You've got some great stories for us today. Tell us about this teacher, this 25-year-old math teacher. I would like to say, before we get to the story, that
maybe you should tell the story first.
Well, I'm going to let Emily tell the story. But I would like to say that before Jim Browdy learned that this teacher had sent out a topless selfie of herself on her phone to her boyfriend, that there's the story, and then got fired, Jim was appalled. And then he went online and looked at the teacher. And he changed his mind.
Yeah. All right, so here's what happened.
She is one gorgeous-looking 25-year-old.
Stupid, however. I'm gonna say that I'm on her side,
first.
But this was stupid.
I did. She sent
she
a naked picture.
She took a photograph. Topless. She took a selfie, and I don't think her full face was in it. That's why they weren't sure it was her. She takes a selfie of her breasts, let's put it that way, semi-nude. She sends it to a colleague, which is somebody she used to be dating at this middle school called the Bellport Middle School on Long Island.
Uh-huh.
One of the students in the school gets a hold of this selfie. You know, who knows exactly how? My guess is the ex-boyfriend gave it to him. Anyway, she gets called in. They put the computer screen up, and, you know, she's looking at herself. If she first went in, she said, it can't be me. I didn't give it to anybody except for the... It turns out it was her. They put her on administrative leave, and then just last week they fired her. She is suing the superintendent, the school system, the principal, saying that this is gender discrimination, because if a guy had taken a picture of his chest and sent it to his girlfriend, they would not have been fired. I'm on her side.
It's an interesting angle.
So am I.
It is.
So am I.
It's a very interesting angle.
Doing it
in the first place. Why anybody in this day and age would post a nude selfie anywhere and not realize that, of course, it's going to get... I can't.
Well, first
imagine.
Of all, she didn't post it. She sent it to an individual.
It was online.
She sent it. No, it was not online.
It was,
she sent it to a former boyfriend or a lover or something.
In many ways, it is, it's out there
in
cyberspace. It is out there.
Totally.
You send
Once you hit
on
send.
Your phone.
Yeah.
Do you think she should be fired for this, Marjorie?
Well, here's what I think. I'm not sure if she should be fired, but, you know, there's a huge problem with... kids in middle school and kids in high school. You talked to Marion Ryan, the district attorney of Norfolk County. You talked to Rachel Ron.
Middlesex
she just got
County.
There. Middlesex County, excuse me. Huge problem with these kids sending selfies of each other, and it winds up a disaster because someone sends a selfie all around school. So I think if you are a teacher, probably it is a good idea to avoid that sort of
thing.
We know
it's a good
idea.
She
should have been held to a higher standard.
I don't know if she needs to get fired.
But,
well, she was.
She was. I don't
and,
know if she...
But,
I,
she but her issue is not even being fired over sending it. It's because it was a naked, you know, it was a sexual organ in their eyes. Mm-hmm. And a guy's chest would not be deemed the same way.
I don't know if I would have made the gender discrimination argument, except two things. In terms of her legal rights, I happen to say, as a practical matter, maybe progressive discipline. She surely, by the way, she's supposedly a beloved teacher,
That's
totally
right.
dedicated to the kids, has a good record, all that sort of whatever. But
Jim decided all this once again after he saw the picture.
Maybe I did,
of the
maybe
teacher
I didn't.
In question.
Well, I wanted to investigate it before I. By the way, a photograph of her face, not a photograph of her body.
Yes, that's
did
right.
I see. Number one,
I
was not aware of.
I think you were trying to find the picture, but you couldn't find it.
I want to get to her
defense. Wait.
Here.
I want to say two things. I'm going to talk about her defense. One. Being topless, man or woman, in New York State, I learned today, is not illegal. That's number one, which I think really helps her argument about discrimination. And secondly, as a practical matter, have either of you been in Times Square lately?
Not racist.
Why was
the naked cowboy?
Forget the cowboy, the guy. I was in Times Square, I would say, a month ago, most recently. Mm-hmm. There are women walking around in bikini bottoms who are totally naked, totally
For
naked.
For what reason?
Because a guy walks up to them and takes a picture of them.
Oh, I see.
And they pay him $10 or something.
Yeah.
I mean, they generally have paint over their breasts.
Is one
but
of them,
they're totally
are
naked.
Any
except
of them
for
middle school teachers?
Okay,
no, but
wait,
I'm saying.
This is a little different.
This is a judgment.
Okay,
issue.
So the defense, her lawyer, this guy, Mr. Ray, the superintendent and the school board, they didn't get the memo that men and women are equal. That's specious. Yeah, they're equal, but they're different.
And they're equal under the law.
I know,
in
their
New York
bodies
State.
Are different.
They are. But the law treats their bodies the same, is my point. The law in New York State says women may be topless in public.
Her side
it's
on
not
this.
Illegal.
I'm just
okay.
saying it's to not recognize
have sent the, photo,
the difference.
But you should not get fired for this. Can right. we all agree
no,
on that?
No, I think you should get suspended and then you can come back.
Well, she was suspended.
Right. I don't think
but then
she should
she
be
was fired.
Fired. Yeah. I don't think she should be fired. I think you say you really screwed up and there's some kind of punishment and knock it off, and this is poor judgment. When you are a middle school teacher, when the kids in front of you are doing this and having tragic consequences in their own lives, because we've seen these stories over and over again about some 12-year-old girl who sent some topless
of
selfie to her
right.
boyfriend, and before you know it, everybody
yeah,
in the
well,
school
she should have known
had
that.
The topless selfie.
Okay,
she,
but can I say, before we leave this subject matter, Marjorie, I just want to say to you, in a public place, next time I'm looking at a picture of somebody off the air
yep.
and I bring you over, it is not to be discussed on the
okay.
air. Is
well,
that okay.
The reason I had to go over.
I'm not taking that pledge.
Is because I kept calling him, Jim, we need to do this.
You were
Jim,
horrible.
We need
I was,
to do that.
I was doing research.
And he's staring at this.
2.5 inches away from this picture.
I was not 2.5 inches away. In
by the way,
case,
everybody picked it up. Yesterday, it was in the New York Times, I think, 2 days in a row. So
yeah,
it got a lot of
it's
attention.
It's a big story. And that's shocking that it would be yeah. a big story, by the way. Rachel Rollins yeah. is the new Suffolk County DA. She is making national headlines. People remember that when she was running for that office in a big field, I think there were 5 people, one of the things that caused her to stand out from the crowd is she listed in her campaign 15 crimes that she would not prosecute should she be elected district attorney. She was on TV with me a couple of weeks ago. Somebody was actually an organization that supported that call, was criticizing her because they still were prosecuting such people. She said, frankly, transition takes time. Mm-hmm. I'm putting out an official policy. She did. I think it was a 65-page memo explaining exactly why she was doing what she was doing. And after she did it, and again, I think she was elected in great part
yes.
based on this commitment, the Secretary of Public Safety for the Commonwealth made clear that he has some real serious problems with this. Can you explain more for us?
So I mean, she really argued for this. I mean, I listened to her on your show a couple times, Jim, when she was speaking about dropping the charge, and she made it so specific and clear why. First of all, a lot of these crimes aren't prosecuted as
that's
it is.
That's the most important point.
You,
that is huge.
You know, somebody gets picked up for shoplifting or, you know, robbing the little Sweetgreens across the street, which somebody did a couple months ago. You know, all that goes nowhere. So if you start it from nowhere in the beginning, you're in the perfect situation. You're not even going to pursue it. And she had a lot of crimes on this. And we want thieves and criminals to be stopped. And I don't like shoplifting. I don't like it. And I know the stores don't like it because, I mean, theft prevention is huge in the stores. But we'd really rather have them pursue other crimes. So Thomas Turco is now saying, oh, well, this is the classic, you're putting children at risk. I had to really scratch my head over that one. that's always the fallback.
Well, he's concerned
you know?
About some of the drug
yeah,
things
the drug
that
things.
She's not prosecuting.
You know what they say about dragging in the children,
yeah.
the last refuge of scoundrels?
It is. That's what it is, dragging the children, the
yeah.
last refuge
what
of scoundrels.
What about the children?
Yeah.
Well, let me just add a couple of things here. One, the people voted for her in great part based upon this commitment, I think, that she's attempting to honor. Number two, the mistaken impression that people are left with is if she's not prosecuting these crimes, most of which are minor, some of which are a little mm-hmm. less, are more serious, that nothing happens. She's a believer in diversionary
yes, of course.
Sentencing, not that nothing happens to you, mm-hmm. but it is far better for these kinds of crimes to do some sort of
community service
or related
yes.
kinds of things
right.
than it is to go to the can and spend all that
and jam up the courts in these.
Exactly. And the thing, another thing, what's his last name? I'm sorry.
Turco,
the Secretary of Public Safety, Turco was concerned about was this part of her 65-page declaration last week, I think it was, or the week before, was talking about how when they were looking at criminal records, they'd only go back 3 years. Mm. He said it was a problem. I tend to agree with him on some issues, but she made the point that if a prosecutor believes in an individual case who works for her, that he or she wants to go look further
they can
back,
do it.
They go to a supervisor
yes.
and they get approval
right.
if it's merited.
Yeah.
So it's not a hard and,
no, it
fast,
is not hard and fast
kind of thing. And
it's
Willie
turned
Gross,
into a
the,
political thing. I know, Willie agrees.
Willie Gross, the new
for
commissioner,
the
was actually, in the beginning, was very upset about this.
Right.
And then they had a meeting. And
yep.
We spoke to both
yes.
of them about it. And they both said, we're still going to look things on a case-by-case basis. If they're extenuating circumstances in some cases, she'll make accommodation.
I feel like Turco has made this strictly a political issue. It's like he's, you know, channeling Donald Trump, and he wants to get tough on, you know,
I don't
minor
know, I'm
criminals.
Sorry. But well, let me just say
you
one
thing. It's analogous to me to the Sanctuary Cities thing, where people get all worked up and it's misrepresented. I mean, the police are not talking about pulling over an accused rapist who's in the country illegally and then letting him go. They're talking about someone who is pulled over for a minor offense and then saying, we're not going to turn this person over to ICE. It's very much...
ISIS.
Did I say ISIS?
Yeah.
I meant to say ICE.
I like that.
Yeah,
ISIS.
We're not... It's misrepresented a lot of the times. So I think that's what happens with this Rachel Rollins thing. Mm-hmm. It's seen as some ridiculous letting...
Of course, a 65-page memo was probably a bit excessive.
Well, I don't think so, because you talked about cash. But let me just say one more thing about this. In terms of people's concerns about Rollins' positions on these issues, you can take issue with an individual part. I think that's fine. The criminal justice system in this country is such a mess. The fact that people like her, I think his name is Krasner, the new DA in Philadelphia, are shaking up the system big time, which is exactly what it needs. And if some part of her program isn't working, there'll be blowback, and obviously there'll be some discussion. You know, before we move ahead,
we've got to wait a few years to see what the ramifications of this are, too.
I agree with that.
If there's an uptick in shoplifting as a result or something.
By the way, Marjorie, a couple of minutes ago, we were talking to Ryan Landry about The Happy Place. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jonathan Soroff, who we all know from The Improper, who's a columnist, wrote us an email and said, with all due respect, your reaction was the most predictably jaded Bostonian, puritanical attitude imaginable. I defy either of you to walk through there and not smile. Narcissistic and designed for social media, maybe, but who cares? It's a bit of frothy, colorful, harmful, I think he meant harmless fun, extremely silly, which, of course, makes it unacceptable in Boston. Thank you, Jonathan.
I thought Murray's piece was a tiny bit snarky. I mean, it's a place I would never go. I'm not going. I'm not happy. Yeah, I'm not going to a happy place. You know?
And you don't want to
be happy.
Right?
Yeah. Right, Jim?
Absolutely.
We
love our misery. So I'm dying to know, because you're talking about this tonight, Beat the Press, 7 o'clock, what you think about the press coverage of former Vice President Biden and his, you know, nose rubbing and shoulder hugging and sniffing of hair experiences.
So I feel as though it's been thrown into the same category as some of the discretions, or worse, committed by people before him, from Les Moonves to Jeff Dagert and Harvey Weinstein. It is, one columnist wrote this week in the New York Times, it's become a feeding frenzy, to the point where if you tune in the network news or whatever you're going to, you know, cable, it's the only issue they're discussing about Biden, to the exclusion of anything else about his policy at this moment in time, and it's just a piling on, piling on, piling on. And I'm going to say, you know, it is a generational thing. He took it to an extreme. I mean, I wouldn't want somebody coming up and hugging me from behind and kissing my head and all that. But it's not the same as reaching up under somebody's...
Oh, well, but no one argues it is. But I thought the point, when I was reading a promo for your show tonight, last night on television, I'm paraphrasing what I read, but I think
I know,
but you didn't use these words. But I think part of your thing was, is the press sort of doing makeup time, meaning for years not having covered this, are they overdoing it in 2019?
Yeah, because the women are credible. I mean, nobody's dismissing anything that any one of these people have said. There's a lot of photographs, although some people are using photographs to bolster their arguments when the people in the photograph saying it didn't bother me at all. Ash Carter's wife. There's a picture
Stephanie
of him leaning
Carter,
over her and whispering in her ear with his hands on her shoulder. It just didn't bother me at all. You know,
we said we were friends for a long time.
You know, it's one of the things you don't hear that, and maybe I just missed the articles discussing this, but when I think of someone who's a sexual harasser, there's a real humiliation thing going on there and a power thing going on.
Well, this is a power thing, too.
This is a power thing.
You're putting your hands on somebody.
Right. But the humiliation does not seem to be what he's doing.
Well, wait. If you've read the accounts from some of the women who've we've heard,
they feel humiliated.
They have felt, well, that's
they
all that matters. It doesn't matter if his intention is to humiliate. That would make it worse.
But I guess I think of it differently with him, even though he shouldn't do it. I'm not saying he should do it. When he doesn't, not a sinister motive, I guess.
Yeah.
And I see the stories I've read about sexual harassment is much more sinister.
Flores, what's her first name?
Lucy, I think.
Lucy, who ran
from Nevada,
Lieutenant Governor. She fully admits, somebody said, well, this sounds like it's a political issue because you're backing Bernie Sanders. And she says, yeah, it is a political issue. I'll totally admit that because he's running for president. This needs to come out.
Now, you know, by the way, I hope, Marjorie, you would agree when, before I read this thing, that one of the things, I will try to make a joke out of anything I possibly can. Mm-hmm. Having said that, one of our colleagues just said Joe Biden, who made his first public appearance at an International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Union event in the last few minutes, as he, Lonnie somebody is the president of that union, and Biden takes to the stage and obviously in a joke says, I just want you to know I had permission to hug Lonnie. Now, I have to say, I don't find that particularly funny while this thing is all sort of percolating. So, in any case, there's that. And there's second thing, which, talk about a tin ear. Michael Smirkanish, he used to be our colleague at our old radio station. He's now on SiriusXM Radio, and he's obviously on CNN on the weekends. He does the first interview with Mark Halpern. Mark Halpern was the guy on MSNBC, ABC before
that. I would have liked to have seen that.
Mark Halpern has been in exile for 17 months.
2 years almost,
Well, I think it's 17 months. Okay. But whatever it is, a year and a half, 2 years. He was accused of essentially rubbing his genitalia against women in his office.
Asking women to sit on his lap.
Yeah, horrible stuff. In any case,
it's more of a black and white case, that one.
He goes on Smirkanish for his first interview, understandably to try to make amends, say I've talked to hundreds of women since, etc. But incredibly, talk about tin ear. Smirkanish, I'm not faulting Smirkanish here at all, asks him what he thinks about the Joe Biden controversy. And incredibly, Halpern answers. Here's Mark Halpern with Michael Smirkanish.
There are probably people out there who aren't the least bit interested in what I have to say about it, a topic like this. But I pretty much agree with Nancy Pelosi that about what she said about Joe Biden and his past practice. I will say this, though. I think this is a bit of a distraction. As serious as the charges are and as important as this debate is, I think Joe Biden is, despite his standing in the polls, is an extremely overrated candidate. He has run before and failed miserably.
Yeah, let me tell you something. The fact that he didn't stop with, there are probably people out there who aren't the least bit interested in what
I have to say
about this. End of discussion. Yeah. I mean, talk about not getting it. It is real.
But he wasn't even addressing the issue. He was addressing the candidate, which is kind of interesting. He's saying he's just overrated. It's like, all right.
By the way, I am not, I should be clear because we've discussed this. I'm not a death penalty kind of guy when it comes to these things. The Weinsteins of the world, I think, should go to jail. Beyond that, there's got to be some point.
And also, I'm going
to
say
people have an opportunity to atone for their sins. But man,
I mean, I understand. Marjorie, you know, we've talked about it. Everybody's been in uncomfortable situations, and we realize there's a change and things. There's a movement here, but at some point, you just got to shut up.
I would say that even 20 or 30 years ago, having a news person like Halpern walking over to you and rubbing his genitalia against your shoulder,
of course,
probably was not great
No, but having somebody come up and put their hand on your shoulder.
Well, that's Joe Biden. There is a big difference.
But that was the Damon argument.
But it's unwelcome.
He got in trouble for. Remember?
Because it was too soon, essentially.
Yeah, that he said need to differentiate.
Hear about this NPR. I got to tell this story. This NPR host out in St. Louis.
I don't think so.
Okay, so his name is Morris. He's been on the air 100 years. He's like, all right, he's been on the air a long, long time. He's about to do an interview with a now-retired anchor woman who has just turned 80. She's a beautiful woman. She comes into the studio. This is off air. He says to her, you look great.
Don't tell me.
Yes. One of the young producers, a female producer, complained, went to management. Management calls him in. He goes, what? What? Are you telling me I did the wrong thing? And somebody went like this, you know, shook their hand back and forth like you're right on the edge. And he just stood up and he said, I quit.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Can I tell you something? I'm probably going to get myself in trouble. I say that to a ton of my television guests, men and women.
What?
That you look fabulous tonight.
Yeah.
Your suit's great. Your dress is great. You look
terrific.
Guess
you can't do it, Jim.
That is really unbelievable.
Yeah. Can't do it.
In any case, okay, moving on. Emily is here for those things and, of course, for this.
Yeah. Incomprehensible.
It's out of control.
How about common sense?
Doesn't matter.
Why not?
This is the kind of thing that drives people crazy.
It's your right.
Doesn't matter. I have absolutely no interest.
Okay, what do you got going there today?
All right, so speaking of common sense, I'm not the commissioner today.
Oh, you're not? That's
no,
sad.
But I started thinking about solutions, government solutions to problems that either don't work or make absolutely no sense. I mean, just ridiculous. Number one on my list, and this is what kicked me off about some other ones.
Go ahead.
The state is allocating $383 million to six Outer Cape towns to deal with the shark problem. Do you know what they're doing?
No. Putting up signs?
Essentially. They are buying tourniquets, ATVs, gurneys. In other words, after-the-fact safety so that they can get you off the beach if you're bleeding to death. But meanwhile, seriously, Marjorie, there are some really great proposals out there about how to deal with this, you know, from everything from culling the seal herd. There's these sonic anchors that somebody's developing that will tell you when a shark is in the water. And somebody else had this idea for a barrier so it won't come in the Nantucket Sound. It's like, instead, they're
there's no way this is $383
million. 383? No. Jim?
Yeah.
How could I make that up?
I don't know.
The state is giving six towns three to buy IVs and gurneys.
Well, if it's $383 million, it's a lot.
Pretty expensive gurneys.
I think that may be a typo. But okay, next.
No, Jim.
I'm not quarreling with you. Yeah. I'm talking about the place.
A typo?
Yeah. But go ahead, next.
All right. The other one, I've said this for years. It drives me crazy. The government forcing gaming companies to set aside profits to deal with gaming addictions. At the same time, they approve more and more games, more lotteries, casinos, sports betting. It's just governmental hypocrisy. You know, you created the problem, and you're forcing the vendor to solve it when you are creating it. It makes no sense to
me. I'm with you. By the way, we don't have sports betting yet, but we will.
We're going to have
it. We'll have it pretty soon.
All right. I love this one.
We're going to start bringing Keno machines to the Newsfeed Cafe. What do you think?
When we were down, what was the casino we went to where they had the...
We don't know which one. We went in one of the Connecticut... We went to Plainville.
If you are a problem
Slots
gambler...
Parlor.
I kind of like them. You know why? Because I think if you have a problem gambling and you just lost like $500 at the slot machines and you feel really lousy about it and you walk out and see a sign that says, you a problem gambler, we have help, it might work.
Marjorie, it's a voluntary program now. And the people who are least likely to use it
them to
are the ones
it.
That have the most
exactly.
serious.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I like them.
No.
Next.
Okay. Right. So this is a...
Oh, by the way, I think if they're going to license these things, I don't agree. I think they should force them to pay for it. The question is, are we over-licensing gambling? And the answer is yes. Next, sorry.
To me, it's just hypocrisy.
Okay.
All right. So Rockland County, New York is banning anyone under the age of 18 from all public places if they're not vaccinated.
Amen.
Other cities... No. That makes no... If you're really concerned about the spread of measles, the only solution is to ban these non-medical exemptions.
Exactly.
At schools.
Exactly.
You got to get rid of philosophical differences and religious differences. It's like, forget it. But to ban people from going to a supermarket?
Well, you shouldn't allow. If your kid is unvaccinated, he or she shouldn't be out in the world.
Well, then we have to get rid of what the real problem is.
I agree with
not
that.
Not banning. The government is banning people from going to the supermarket. All right.
Okay, fine.
All right, Marjorie, here's one. You guys were just talking about this.
I'm ready.
So, I mean, law enforcement is jailing and fining the owners of these massage parlors who offer sexual services. Is it, you know, they're not jailing the Johns. In the case of that Bob Kraft thing, that woman is still in jail. Did you realize that?
I did not know.
The woman who owns the, she can't post bail.
Who was the one who took care of him? Is that not right? The woman who owns the joint, I think, was one of the two women.
One of the two is still in jail
because
she can't. It's like, no, wait a minute. And all the other guys are, you know, with their high-priced lawyers in the courts. That's just backwards to me.
That is really backwards.
All right. I know this is a sensitive issue because the marathon is coming up. But, I mean, this is our state government and our local police at work. They close the T-stations, forbid backpacks, disallow street crossings, on and on and on. It's a real button down. The feds come in, everybody. But that's a once-a-year thing when we have all these other parades and marches and... We just had the Super Bowl parade. Zero. None of those things. What is the difference?
Well, there were a lot of cops. There were a lot
Why
of cops.
Why are there millions of dollars spent on this one event and the others are just treated like it's an everyday event?
I would bet that, I can't remember what it's called, but it may be declared one of those national something-somethings like the Super Bowl game
was it
itself
always?
Is. I don't know what the answer is. Maybe post-marathon bombing.
This one just drives me out of my mind.
Yeah.
Creating Logan Airport central parking drop-off for Uber and Lyft.
Crazy.
Right, here's one of the things that makes no sense. Regular people, like you and me dropping off our kid or our mother or something, we're going to linger. Oh, one more hug, you know, you have your lunch. The Uber people are so efficient. They run in, they run out. I mean, first of all, I don't even think it's a problem that needs solving.
Well, there is congestion, but the notion you're going to carry your luggage and your young children from Central Parking is ridiculous.
And when they say it's a 5 to 7 minute walk, I think it depends on who's walking.
Right. Yeah.
You know, if you get little kids with you, it could be a 15 minute walk, you know, in the cold in February.
Okay, we got to wrap
this up. I know
this
is a good
here.
Idea, but go it's ahead. Not going to work. Congestion fees for highways. Other times are going to become equally congested. The real problem and the real solution is rapid transit, for starters, and collecting collecting the fees. You see the article today about the T.
Yeah.
$42 million a year they don't collect.
We should do congestion.
The last four times I took the
T, everything.
Nobody collected.
At least try
the same
it
thing,
out.
The Green Line is notorious for that because you're in the second car half the time and you can't get to the front to
you can't
the
even
money.
You can't even get a, find a machine to work to buy the ticket.
So
I have many more. I'll
now
save
that
this.
You have proven that you not only don't want to go to Happy Place but don't want to be happy. What are you doing tonight on Big
we are
Press?
Taking a look at Biden, and then we've got this great little dust up about these investigative reporters who first broke the Charlie Rose story in the Washington Post, and then they were about to break the Jeff Fager
yeah.
story, and Marty Baron killed it. It's really interesting with a lot of little nuance to it.
I'm dying to hear that, actually.
Oh, good. I'm all excited.
Emily, it's great to see you. Emily Rooney.
Okay, Emily Rooney, thank you very much. Emily Rooney joins us every week. She is the host of Beat the Press, which you can catch tonight at 7 o'clock on WGBH Channel 2. Emily, thank you very much. Another great list. Coming up, Cannabis Control Commission Chairman Steve Hoffman is here to go over the latest developments with the recreational marijuana industry. He is next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan live from our GBH studio at the Boston Public Library. In November, the first state-sanctioned recreational marijuana stores opened in Northampton and Leicester. Since then, the Cannabis Control Commission has continued to approve new pot shops across the state. To date, we have 15, I believe, open with more on the way. Joining us to talk about what's working, what is not working, what the state is learning about the industry is Cannabis Control Commission Chair Stephen Hoffman. Steve, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Jim.
Great to see you. And Steve reminded me, last time you saw me, I had terrible poison ivy. So that was a long time ago.
It was a while ago.
Yeah. I'm glad you're back.
I was like itching to beat the band. Terrible. Anyway, Steve, the Globe's got an editorial title, the headline of which is Time to Halt Big Weed's Advance. And they talk about the fact that they're supposed to be just... you're not supposed to be able to hoard too many licenses.
There are limits on the number of licenses.
Yes, three license limit.
Well, it's three on the medical side and three on the adult use side.
Okay. But according to this Globe editorial, they said that when it comes to enforcing this three license limit on pot shop ownership, there's a level either of buck passing or muddleheadedness or both that's subverting the original intent. And they talk about these other companies which seem to be getting, you know, looking for 13 licenses or 12 licenses or seven different stores. So what is going on?
Well, I don't like being characterized as muddleheaded. I'll say that on the outset. Let me start by just saying what I think hopefully is obvious. We are committed to enforcing our regulations, all of our regulations, including the limits on control. We do several things. One is when we get an application for a new license, our investigative team goes into who is investing in this, who are the management, who's on the board of directors, and they peel the onion back as far as possible, as far as necessary, to ascertain that there are no issues with control in terms of the limits that we have. When there is an application to transfer the ownership of a license from one individual or entity to another, they do the same kind of investigation. So we're very comfortable that, you know, we're investigating into that. I think the story in the Globe, or the editorial in the Globe today, was a lot of speculation about, well, this company says they're going to acquire this company and then they're going to have too many licenses. Well, first of all, those transactions have not yet occurred.
Yep.
Second of all, if and when those transactions occur, the new entity has to apply to our commission to get the licenses transferred, and if the acquisition will result in them going over the limit, we will not approve the transfer of those licenses. So we are going to enforce these regulations. A lot of what is being written about are things that might happen that have not yet come to the commission, and I won't comment on open investigations, of which there are a couple. nor will I hypothesize about what might happen when something comes to commission. When something comes to commission, I have confidence our investigative team will do the research necessary. I and the other commissioners will look through all the source documents, we'll talk in public, and we will not approve the transfer of a license if it's going to mean that they are over the limits.
But Steve, if I may, and sure. Obviously you know a lot more about the facts than we do, my understanding was that at least in a couple of these cases it's not hypothetical, that what these larger sort of big marijuana, for lack of mm-hmm. a better expression, are doing is circumventing the law, crawling through loopholes, whatever. Use the word control twice.
Right.
I think that's what the statute
says. That's what the statute says.
By technically not controlling, maybe getting a management contract
right.
or things like that. There are those kinds of situations
sure.
that already do exist that
right.
are not prospective. And what are you doing about that?
Sure. So a couple of those instances have been raised. They occurred in the medical marijuana program prior to, you know, we took over responsibility for the program in January. So those circumstances arose before we took responsibility for the program. The Department of Public Health, who had been regulating the medical marijuana program until December, informed us about these concerns, and we started an investigation. I am not going to comment on an open investigation, but we're investigating exactly those issues. But they happened, the transfers or you know the issues that you just described, they happened before we had jurisdiction of the program.
So even
the
if
medical
you can,
program.
If you can't describe the investigation itself, which I understand, can you tell us who you're investigating?
No,
you can't.
No.
So the concern, I assume, and I from having known you a little bit in this capacity, that I believe you've told us you share
uh-huh.
is not just enforcing the statute, but ensuring that there's sort of equal opportunity for a whole spectrum of people.
Absolutely.
And not having big marijuana essentially making it impossible for local entrepreneurs, including people of color, women, et cetera, to find a place. So,
mm-hmm.
one, what's your time frame on investigations? And
sure.
two, you still, I assume, do share that concern
absolutely.
About edging out other potential license holders or managers or whatever,
yeah.
yes?
Yeah, so a couple questions that you asked there. So one, there is no time frame on the investigations. I mean, we're working on them, but we're gonna keep going until we're comfortable we know the answer. So I can't offer you a time frame other than we're diligently working on those investigations. We are committed, as we always have been, to this being a diverse industry in terms of gender, ethnicity, other factors, and a diverse industry in terms of big and small players. One of the things we have done is not put a cap on the number of licenses that we're going to issue across the state so that nobody gets edged out. So we're working very hard. We're doing a lot of things to promote diversity and to promote a mix of small and big businesses.
But isn't it fair to say now, in terms of the diversity mm-hmm. issue, what you're doing is not working? I mean, we read the statistics about which,
sure.
again, from the Globe, last year you certified 120 applications
right.
in economic empowerment. None of the 13 that they described ultimately ended up being one of those places,
well,
right?
Of the 120 or 30 that were certified, they were given prioritization. Four have completed their four application packets and are in process. It's not a lot, obviously.
And also the 118 provisional licenses,
sure.
only nine women-owned, two
yeah.
minority.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you guys doing to sort of elevate the priority?
Sure.
So that these kinds of ratios don't continue.
Yeah, well, I think it's early in the process. I mean, one of the things that we deliberately did was not open 200 stores on day one, because I think if that had happened, it would have been much harder to work successfully around these issues. So aside from the prioritization that that applicants have been given, we have in our license application, every company that's applying for a license has to tell us what their diversity plan is and what their plan is to help impact or help those communities that were disproportionately impacted by previous enforcement. And a lot of good things are happening. Companies are starting incubators and accelerators to help people get into this industry. We have a social equity training program where we're giving people training in entrepreneurial skills, on finding jobs, on networking. We're supplementing that with some commission-led programs. I come from a private sector background. I know how to write a business plan, so we're going to help people on that. We're doing tons of outreach. The big issue we've got, and it's one that I can't tell you we've solved yet, but we're working incredibly hard on, is financing. For people that want to, this, you know, even though we've done as much as we possibly can to keep barriers to entry low, it still costs money to get into this business, and most of the people we're trying to help don't have a lot of net worth. So we're working both private sector as well as going to legislature and saying, can we create some kind of state fund that will provide maybe interest-free loans to the people we're trying to help.
Who are you talking about, though?
anybody that will listen
no,
to me.
No, I mean people like Governor Baker?
Right now I'm working in the legislature and some of the people within the Baker administration.
You know, one last thing, I'm sorry, and then Marjorie, I'll shut up, is we discussed this with you the couple of times you've been here. The one thing, and I think all three of us, you're the one that matters, but I assume all three of us and those who wrote the statute agree that in the pot shops themselves, which is where the big money is, ultimately, if you do well, we want diversity. Yeah. But the things that you guys decided to back burner so that mm-hmm. you would get this first thing right, I think is what you told us, rather than trying to do too many things at once, mm-hmm. were the less capital intensive kinds of things, like deliveries and things sure. like that, where obviously people who had less money yep. and less resources could get in the business, maybe not at the same level as a retail operator.
Right.
So isn't advancing the timetable for that one of the ways to bring more diversity sure. more quickly?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Delivery and social consumption are, to me, incredibly complicated and important issues, precisely for the reasons that you just went into. And just for history, we approved those categories of licenses in our draft regulations back in December of 2017. We then had public comment and public feedback, got a lot of pushback from law enforcement and from senior elected officials, and chose at that time to defer those two categories of licenses until we went through another regulatory process, which we just started. We had public listening sessions around the state in January. We're going to have draft regulations probably at the end of April, go through public comment again. And in that process, we will explicitly look again at delivery and social consumption.
So that may happen this year.
I think it's, I'm not going to speculate on how okay. the other four commissioners and myself are going to come together, but we're absolutely looking at it. We will have proposals for draft regulations on both. That will be part of this process. What I won't speculate on is whether they're going to be approved or not, but it's really important. But people need to be aware. We got enormous pushback, and it was very well thought out and very sincere pushback about issues, particularly with respect to public safety.
We're talking to Stephen Hoffman. He's the chair of the Cannabis Control Commission.
So I've never run a business in my life, and you know a lot more about this than I do, obviously, but I'm just wondering from a business perspective, because there are these wealth. I did a story for the Globe about none of the place down in Brookline.
Sure. Well, they just opened. That was
they
the
just
one.
Opened it. Yep. It's gorgeous. It's in the old bank building.
It's an old bank building. And they did a great. I grew up in Brookline, and they did actually a really cool job of keeping the historical character of the
they
building
did,
in
the
place.
They did the mahogany doors.
Yeah.
And they got the marijuana in the vault.
Plus,
and it's
the
gorgeous.
Vault. The vault is pretty good for securing their products.
So. It is.
Wait, why don't you tell them what you did this morning?
Oh, and this morning with a friend of mine.
I don't need to know this, Marjorie.
No, it's okay. Legal. It's legal.
I went online to reserve. You can reserve.
Yeah, no. We were working with them closely. It's a great building, but it's a really tough intersection.
It's a tough
Harvard
intersection.
Street and Route 9, and they don't have a lot of parking. They did a great job, in my opinion, of working with the town of Brookline and with the local police in Brookline. They have the reservation system. They yep. have remote parking and shuttles. They did a good job of
that.
They
managing. Did do a good job. But I mentioned that because if you do reserve, you have to give your name and your email and your
okay.
phone number.
I haven't tried.
You haven't reserved. So what I worry about is that if these big companies and yep. they have done a beautiful job there, or these other companies get so far ahead, mm-hmm. when the little mom-pop thing yep. that has not been able to get financing yep. to start up, aren't they at a huge disadvantage, or am I wrong about
that? Well, I don't know if they're a huge disadvantage. First of all, there are only 15 around the state. We don't have a cap on the number of licenses, so I'm not sure how many retail stores there are ultimately going to be in Massachusetts, but there's going to be a lot more than 15. So I think there's a lot of room. I think about the restaurant industry where, you have some big chain restaurants, but there's plenty of room for an individual restaurant that differentiates its product or service. Same thing for the brewing industry. I saw some statistics recently about the number of craft breweries in Massachusetts. It's an extraordinary number, and so you have some very big players, obviously, in the beer industry, but there's room for the smaller guys. I think the challenge is going to be to find a place that you can locate where you can differentiate your product and your service and offer a value that the bigger guys can't match, and I have tremendous confidence in the entrepreneurial ability of people that are entering in this industry.
Here's the other thing I didn't realize. We always talk about this being a cash business, which is a difficult
so
thing, because, but apparently you can use debit cards.
There's some. It's still a primarily cash business, but there are some banks and some off the federal banking rails companies that are offering debit cards, so and that's good.
So how does that work I understood that this was not kosher because you weren't supposed to go through a bank.
Well, so There are some banks that have come into the industry, and I'm really grateful that they have, because this is a really important issue. So there's five banks right now that are banking the adult use industry, and what they're doing is they're doing cash management services. So they're allowing the retailers to take their cash, get it delivered to the bank, and then then it's part of the electronic banking process. So that's happening in some instances. But there are also some companies that operate closed loop systems that don't go on the federal banking rails that allow for debit card transactions. We're now getting into an area of expertise that is beyond my own. But there are workarounds. I mean, ultimately, the federal issue will hopefully get resolved, and banks will be able to enter and provide normal banking services to the industry.
So I think you told you on that banking issue. Are you leaving banking?
Just one last thing about that. No, I'm not leaving banking. One last thing on this.
I know we're fighting
over questions. One last thing on this banking issue is now that there are the recreational places, well, the medicinal places were there too, but if you can't go to a bank with your cash, what do they do?
Well, the good news is that right now, because there are only 15 retail stores open, they're
There's
all banked.
Enough.
They're,
okay.
They're, and as I said, there are five banks.
So
they had
this
industry.
Vision of cash and mattresses and stuff like that.
I was totally concerned about that, and we worked really hard. We got a lot of help from the Division of Banking. We worked with the Mass Bankers Association, with the Cooperative Credit Union Association, and I'm really happy that right now the industry is fully banked. But again, we've got only 15 retail stores open, so we need more banks. We continue to talk to any bank that wants to tell us. Our job is not to talk them into anything, but to say, look, here's how we're regulating the industry, here's how we're going to enforce those regulations, here's the data we can provide you, because banking this industry is not just about the federal issue, but it's also very expensive business, because you have to do anti-money laundering, you have to know your customer, you have to make sure that you're not helping diversion. So it's expensive business banking. We can provide some data to make it a little bit more cost-effective for the banks. So we're working as hard as we can. And, we're having conversations with another half dozen banks that I hope will choose to enter the industry.
One or two more additional things on banks. And again, this is Stephen Hoffman, who's the chair of the Cannabis Control Commission. Really appreciate your coming by. Steve, I think you said to us a couple of times ago, or maybe last time, that you were hoping to have a meeting with Andrew Lelling, a U.S. attorney. Am I right about that?
No, I think you put words in my mouth.
I said you should?
You said I should, and I said...
Have you?
No. We did reach out early on. He got a point, I think, not that long ago, but we reached out. It was when Sessions rescinded the call memorandum, which was January of 2018, I think. And one of our commissioners who had relationships with some people in his office reached out, and he said he wasn't interested in a meeting.
He's not interested in a meeting.
That's what we were told.
And have the banks reached? I mean, one of the concerns, I know you said this. I said, can you assure? Oh, no, I actually asked Andrew Lelling this. I asked Andrew Lelling when he was on the U.S. attorney with me on television, can you assure a bank that if they take money, they won't be prosecuted? He said the answer was no.
You asked me that question as well, and I said no.
So, have those bank leaders spoken to Lelling's office? Are they just willing to take a risk?
I don't know. What I know is that I think that all of them have been very diligent about understanding.
Banks.
The banks that have chosen to enter have been very diligent in their processes, understanding it. They've talked to other banks. They've talked to the Mass Bank, the Division of Banking in the state. Uh-huh. And I think that they've made a decision that this is a worthwhile risk return trade off. I will say that there has been no incidents, not just in Massachusetts but across the country, of any bank that's banking this industry being intervened federally.
Hey, by the way, when should we expect a pot shop in Boston?
You asked Mayor Walsh. There are five, as far as I know, there are five host community agreements that have been signed in Boston so far. The law is that we cannot give a license at the state level until there is a host community agreement signed. So now that there's five, they can apply for a license to our commission. But until they apply, I can't answer your question.
You know, one of the things, you happened to be on television with me months ago, were totally by coincidence,
yes.
I think. You were on with a woman, Bernadette Coughlin, was that her name?
Yeah.
Who was fired after she injured herself. They took a blood test, and she failed it, and her contention was, one, not only did it not affect my work, but because marijuana stays in your system longer, it was a while ago, and it raised, and by the way, I think you met with her after.
I did.
I met
with her before, and we just were in the green room together, but then she and her husband and their attorney came and visited the commission a little while later.
And I know this is not formally part of your jurisdiction. You were just doing it because it's an issue that concerns you. Is anybody, we discussed this with the attorney general. Yeah. This is a big issue.
Always a gigantic
about
issue.
What happens at work. So you don't have any authority over this.
No, we don't. But I think it's a good story here, actually. I think, I mean, it's a sad story in terms of what happened to Bernadette. But what I think is great and what she deserves an enormous amount of credit for is she and her husband literally started walking the halls of Beacon Hill, of the State House. We gave her some introductions, but she, on her own initiative, went around. And there is now legislation that has been filed to deal with this issue so that people don't get fired when, you know, I think, if I'm correct, I think she's a medical marijuana patient. It does not affect her job. And so there's now legislation. I think Senator Lewis filed.
That makes sense.
Jason Lewis
filed. Yeah. So I'm not going to forecast whether it's going to pass or not or what it's going to look like. But the fact is, you know, to her credit, her enormous credit, I mean, she
citizen
just.
Citizen activist.
Yeah, it's
That's
really
great.
Phenomenal.
So this really doesn't have anything to do with you, but it does have to do with...
Let's ask anyway. Why not?
It has to do with Boston. Dan Adams, who writes a lot about the marijuana business for the
I've heard his name once or twice before.
Once or twice. He's got this kind of wild story with the headline. They're completely making it up as they go along. Insiders fume over Boston marijuana licensing.
Yeah.
And they're talking. You probably read the story.
I haven't, to be honest with you.
Well, it's this weird thing where there's two East Boston marijuana proposed stores that are going before the city zoning board of appeals.
Right.
And I guess there's a law in Boston that can't be more than...
They have to be a half a mile separation.
At least a half a mile separation. So what happened is the zoning board of appeals took them up in the order that they were listed on the zoning board docket for that evening. And when the first one got approved, the second one got the zilch because
of the half mile.
It was less than a half a mile. And the one that won was from Pittsfield, and the one that lost was from East Boston, called East Boston Bloom, and there were many Latinos and a veteran that were involved with East Boston Bloom. So it does seem a little chaotic, and you wonder if it's this chaotic in Boston, what is it like in places that are less...
So it's can I take a little bit of time on this? Because this is really important. I don't know how much time we have left.
You have time.
So first of all, I'm not going to comment on Boston specifically. What I will say is that the law, you know, first of all, Massachusetts has a really long tradition of local control. And the law that created our commission that is creating the adult use industry tries to find that balance. And so citizen towns have some very specific rights and responsibilities. So they can ban. They have to go through a specific process to do so based upon how they voted in 2016. But there are 45 plus or minus cities that have banned marijuana facilities in their towns. Out of 351 cities and towns in the state, 138 put in place moratoriums, which were not bans, but were to help them plan once we released our regulations. Those moratoriums had to be approved by the Attorney General, and they all had to be finite time frames, and pretty much all of them expired, not all of them, but most of them expired at the end of December. So those towns and cities are just getting started because they had these moratoriums in place. The law says, as I said earlier, we cannot approve a license at the state level unless there's a host community agreement signed. It also says that the absolute authority to zone marijuana facilities resides with cities and towns, as it should. Then there's a very interesting thing comes next, which is the law says, but zoning cannot be used as a de facto way to ban. Now, that's an interesting...
It's very interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Attorney General has taken some steps where some towns have done some things that she thought were using zoning as de facto bans. So
She's also gotten tougher. Because in a couple, at least one case, she was pretty permissive, and she ended up reversing herself.
Yeah, I think she's helping enforce the law. I have just the greatest deal of respect for how she's helping this process. But this is an amazing experiment in kind of local democracy. 351 different experiments are going on, and some towns are rushing to embrace this and making it as easy as possible. Some towns are moving slowly, glacially, whatever phrase you want to use, and some are really trying to keep it out. And, you know, I think it's going to take a while to play out. I am really heartened by the support of the Attorney General on this because, again, this is local stuff. This is not something that we have any jurisdiction over, but it was deliberately part of the way the law was put together, which is that local cities and towns had a lot of say in this matter, even though we're the only licensing agency. A
couple of quick things, Stephen Hoffman, if we can. When you were in the dreaded private sector, which is where you spent your whole career...
Was it dreaded?
Did you do startup work?
Yes.
How would you rate yourself as the chair? I'm serious about this. If you were an outsider looking at how you and the Cannabis Control Commission have done in their first, what is it, a year and a half or something?
Just a little over a year and
how
a half.
How would you rate? I'm serious. How would you rate your performance?
On what scale?
Whatever scale you choose to create, an honest scale.
I would give us a B+.
And what's
there
your greatest...
There you go. There's a modest man.
That's pretty much the way I kind of got it through school. just get my B pluses and get out of there.
What's your greatest failing so far, would you say? Well, failing is by...
Yeah, I wouldn't say that we failed anything. I think that there are a couple of things that we're getting incompletes on. I think the social equity piece, we are getting an incomplete on. Not we failed. We're doing a lot. A lot of it has not yet had a chance to have impact. But we need to do more. So absolutely an incomplete on that. The whole issue I was just talking to Marjorie about in terms of how we collaborate with cities and towns, I think we've worked very hard to be collaborative, but I think it's a messy process, and I would like to have seen a little bit more clarity. For instance, you know, this whole issue about who has authority to enforce host community agreements, we've asked the legislature for clarity on that. I wish we had asked earlier. So there's some things I wish we had gotten into, but, you know, A, I think B plus... but also incomplete on some really important issues. So we have a lot of work left ahead of us. We know that.
Can we end where we started?
I have one question before we go. Big
pharma thing for a second. You say you're doing investigations and you can't tell us who or what, but are you not worried that your lawyers, your investigative teams may conclude that the law does allow? Because I assume these firms are pretty lawyered up and are not just willy-nilly doing things.
I'll make that assumption.
But probably believe that we can get away with this. I know that wouldn't be your term. I'm using that term. Are you worried that the law does allow for this and that unless the legislature tightens the law, that we're going to have a marijuana industry controlled by two or three monsters?
No,
I don't mean monster in a pejorative. I mean in terms of size.
Yeah, sure. No, I understand that. No, I'm not concerned about the law, and I'm totally committed, as is the rest of the commission, we're not going to let this happen. So to me, there's no debate about what's going to happen. The issue in my mind is control is a pretty tricky topic. You know,
the
term control. So we have in our regulations, if you have more than 10% of equity, that's control. But there's other ways to control, you know, in terms of contracts.
What if you manage a joint?
Well, management per se is not control, but it's the devil's in the details. Let me give you an example. If a bank makes a loan to a company, very few people would say that bank has, quote, control of that company. But if you get into the terms of the loan and they're onerous and restrictive enough, well, it could be. So it's a really, really complicated topic. But so I don't think the law needs to change. I just think we need to be incredibly diligent as we go through these analyses, and our commitment is to do exactly that.
I just have one last thing before you go, Steve, is there's a lot of people that weren't keen on legalizing marijuana.
47% of the state, to be precise.
Right. But they said, well, you know, the good thing is we can get a lot of tax dollars for this. And there's been a lot of saying we haven't gotten that much. Of course, it's only 15 stores open.
It's early.
So you are, again, a business guy. Do you think
that... I used to be a business guy. Now I'm a bureaucrat.
That's right. Now you're a marijuana guy. But do you think that in terms of tax dollars, this eventually is going to pan out?
Yeah, absolutely.
Based on early attendance, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, just look at the lines that still exist on these stores. There's a pent-up demand. There's no question about it. And, you know, it's not yet satisfied by the 15 stores, unquestionably. I think in the long term, this is absolutely going to generate the kind of tax revenue that the state expected. The only question in my mind is, what's the ramp? How long does it take us to get there? But with the end state, there's no question in my mind that it's going to hit the kind of targets that the legislature is expecting out of this.
So before
and the cities and towns who get 3% of retail as tax as
so
well.
Before you go, Marjorie started this interview by reading from a Globe editorial, the title of which was "Time to Halt Big Weeds Advance."
Should we ask the author of the editorial?
I was going to ask right there.
Do you want? Would you mind? I never do this to anybody, but you're such a transparent kind of character. Do you mind if she joins us?
I absolutely don't. I like Shirley
Leung. We're going to join.
If you had just seen the look of my press secretary when I agreed to do that,
I just saw it. We'll just have a brief discussion here. She heard the beginning of the interview. Shirley is the interim editorial page editor of the Globe.
Right.
We'll have a brief discussion. We'll break and then we'll continue.
What do you call it? Muddle-headed?
What do you think? Well, let me read the line that was the. And when it comes to enforcing. Can I read the line?
Sure.
And when it comes to enforcing the three license limit on pot shop ownership, there's a level of either buck passing or muddle-headedness or both that is subverting its original intent. I know before you got here, Shirley Leung, you heard what Chairman Hoffman had to say. What was your reaction to his response?
Didn't you say it was speculation, right? Our editorial was built on speculation.
No, I just said that some of the deals you were talking about had not yet transpired.
That is true. We talked about this when
we did an editorial board meeting, 2 weeks ago?
Right, just when the first Spotlight series hit. And it is true, but But they are poised to dominate some of them, right? And
we're not going to allow that to happen. The one thing that I said in the initial response to the question that Jim asked me, we are not going to allow that to happen. We are committed to enforce our regulations, and that should be obvious. Right. I hope that's obvious.
Well, I would assume now it is, now that there's spotlight stories about
it. I would respectfully say we've been committed to enforcing our regulations long before the spotlight story came out.
Anything else?
Well, I have one last thing. Yeah. Steve Hoffman, when you wake up in the morning.
I really like the sports pages of the Globe.
When you wake up in the morning and read an editorial like Shirley's, what's your reaction?
So there's kind of a funny anecdote about this. So I get up in the morning. I read the Times and the Journal online. I'm sorry. Yeah. And then I get in my car and I stop at this convenience store that's right down the street, and I've been stopping there for years.
A hard copy?
I buy coffee and the Globe.
Oh, we like that. That's even better.
Coffee and the Globe. And as I'm getting my coffee, I'm reading the front page of the Globe, and the guy that runs the store is a guy I've known for many, many years. He's an Iranian immigrant. He's a wonderful man. He has heard me use the foulest language he's ever heard in his life. I pick up the Globe and go, oh.
I was hoping the answer was.
So I do have one thought. One thought that we introduced in the editorial was the Department of Public Health, when they were in charge of medical marijuana, and then it was transferred the responsibility.
December 31st, yeah.
Right, to you, to the Cannabis Control Commission. And one of the things that we introduced in this editorial was the idea that here you have two state agencies trying to enforce the law. Mm-hmm. DPH seemed, knew there was a problem but decided to pass the buck.
I'm not going to comment on that, obviously.
Right. So, but for us, we introduced the idea of, shouldn't the Attorney General, Maura Healey, get involved here? Shouldn't she review what's going on between two state agencies?
Well, it's certainly her prerogative to do what she sees fit. We took over the program in December of last year as per legislative mandate. Right. We are in a process right now where we're trying to evaluate which of their regulations need to change to be more in accord with ours. But we've already said we're going to investigate transfers of ownership and make sure that they don't violate the legislative cap. So, I think we're fine on that. I'm not going to comment on what DPH did or did not do. They made us aware of an investigation or concern they had, and we are investigating that, as we've acknowledged publicly. Mm-hmm. So the Attorney General has been incredibly supportive. I'm obviously not going to tell her what to do, but I will repeat what I've said before. We're going to enforce our regulations, and there shouldn't be any doubt about that. I hope there's no doubt about that.
So before you leave, do you want to tell us the language you did use when you read the editorial, or no?
My wife would be really mad at me if I said that publicly.
Steve Hoffman, we really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Take care.
Steve Hoffman is the Cannabis Control Commission Chairman. Thank you very much for coming in having a sense of humor about this whole thing. I guess you could have a sense of humor about this whole thing. Anyway, coming up, yesterday Steve Wynn's ex-wife testified at the Gaming Commission hearing. Shirley the Young joins us for that and more next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan live from the Boston Public Library. Well, she's already here, so whatever. The interim editorial page editor of the Globe, who you just heard a minute ago, that would be Shirley Young. Shirley, good to see you.
Hi. Again.
I guess we've gotten all the marijuana questions.
We have, but because I'm curious, our colleague back in Brighton just typed for us, Joe Biden, after he made the speech this morning, originally made the joke about hugging the president of the IBEW, had his permission. A reporter asked Joe Biden, "You think you owe these women a direct apology?" Biden says, "I made it clear that if I made anyone feel uncomfortable, I feel bad about that." The reporter follows up and says, "But an apology?" Biden says, "I'm sorry. I didn't understand more. I'm not sorry for any of my intentions." How do you think he's handling this thing?
Oh, man. The first reaction was just a statement, right?
Two statements from spokespeople, and then a statement from him.
Well,
then the video.
And actually, we were talking about this Monday at the board level and at an editor board meeting, and we were not happy with the statement. It just seemed very distant. It didn't seem like a real apology. And then he And then we were like, he'd be much more effective if he did a video. And then suddenly there was a video. I think he needs to. I guess it goes from bad to worse, back to bad again.
You know what I never understand? And say, he's a really smart guy. I mean, why doesn't he just say, "Of course, I apologize to them."
He should have. That
it's clear
the right
that
answer.
Some of them felt uncomfortable, which was not my intention.
Yeah.
But of course, I apologize.
Well,
I just don't get this.
There could be another reason, because he's supposedly the moderate of the Democrats. He's supposed to be more the going to get the Trump voters, the blue collar workers and stuff. Maybe he thinks he's going to appeal to those people by saying, "I'm not going to totally roll over."
I mean, I can see why he's not saying "I'm sorry" right away, because you have a lot of people defending him. A lot of people saying, I mean, maybe not defending
the actions,
yes, but saying this shouldn't disqualify him from running for president.
These are all the PC Democrats getting carried away. They're going to crucify the guy. I mean, you do hear a lot of that.
But what you just read, though, it seems like you should just say "I'm sorry" if you're asked point blank.
And move on. Or attempt to move on.
We're talking to Shirley Leon. I hope he doesn't run.
He appears to be doing that.
Yeah, I don't think.
Yeah,
I think he's running.
I think he's running.
I think he's running.
I think it's not going to go well. But anyway, so let's move on to something else. Jim is really expert on this, but the Wynn Resort licensing. You guys have had some great stories about this in the Globe. It does not appear that the Wynn people, at least from my reading, have been upfront about what's this reporting of the sexual harassment claims over there, and the ex-wife of Steve Wynn, who has a huge share. What does she get? Own half
She's
the
largest
company,
private shareholder.
Yeah, largest shareholder.
Yeah, has not been truthful. So we were talking yesterday about whether or not the Wynn Casino should get the license.
You know, that is the $2.6 billion
question.
Right. And now the commission is deliberating. This was not live streamed. Joan Vernocchi from the
opinion section. She wrote a great column. Yeah,
right,
great column.
She was there for 3 days, and so she was debriefing. We haven't seen her for 3 days. No. And we editorialized. They did not live stream this. They did make the reports available, and we put a copy online. This is the report that the Gaming Commission did on about Steve Wynn, the allegations of sexual assault, and what the company did to if they were involved in some kind of cover up of it, or what they did to remedy it. And I think the headline out of 3 days of hearing is Matt Maddox, the CEO of Wynn Resorts, he was grilled by the members of the commission, and he did not come out looking very good. I think there was an exchange with Gail Cameron, mm-hmm, one of the commissioners. He says, "I did not know about Steve Wynn's transgressions," even though he was groomed to be the next CEO, even though
he was the CFO at this point, wasn't he?
Right. He was groomed to be the next CEO. I think he was like his best man at one of his weddings, mm-hmm, Steve Wynn's weddings. And
happened four, I believe. There have been four or three. I mean, I shouldn't say four.
And so Gail Cameron, I believe, asked, should you have known? I mean, you say you didn't know, but should you have known, given your position in the company? And I think one of the other questions that was really, amazing was he was asked about the sexual harassment policy at the company, and, how is it better now? And he couldn't answer the question. Can you cite one of the policies, one of the statutes that makes this a better policy now? And he couldn't do it.
Excuse me. Only two wives. Okay. That was Rupert Murdoch.
But married Elaine twice.
Oh, he married Elaine twice.
Two wives, three marriages.
Okay, thank you.
You know, the thing that I don't understand about this that maybe you can explain, and by the way, even though I didn't agree with it, Larry Edelman wrote a really interesting piece.
Two pieces.
Oh, I didn't see the second one. Basically saying, fine them, maybe get rid of Maddox.
He was fine them $100 million, right. And then the next day, Larry said, okay, fine him and get rid of Maddox.
Oh, I did see him.
And get rid of Maddox.
But his basic bottom line was the bottom line you took yesterday, and a caller who just got a job
we
at the casino guy, who said it's thousands of jobs. If they say they're not suitable, they're going to be in court forever. No developer is going to buy. However,
and the jobs are coming in June.
The thing that I do not understand is this. One of their primary arguments from Maddox and others is we've cleansed ourselves.
Right.
Yes, we didn't know, even though some people like Elaine Wynn lied, obviously, by not telling the commission, or at least misled the commission. The thing I don't understand is, since Elaine Wynn, it's factually beyond dispute, did not tell the commission what would have been probably disqualifying information when the hearing happened, she's still the largest private shareholder. She, according to an article I read this morning, was in great part responsible for the current chair of the board getting that position. How can they argue that we have rid ourselves of those people who misbehave when she deceived the commission? And if she hadn't, they probably wouldn't have gotten a license to begin with. I don't get that.
I mean, I think there are two questions, Maddox and Elaine Wynn, because they've cleansed everybody else. So these are the two remaining qualifiers. And I think that is something that the commission has to look at now. And one of the things that's interesting is that back when they were debating whether or not to give the license to Wynn, right?
Originally,
probably, 2014? One of the questions is, where was sexual harassment? Where was that issue? That probably was not on the radar screen of the commission, right? It's usually the mob, you know, financial crimes.
Right.
One
2013, everybody's sexually harassing.
Right. So I guess we're saying that on one hand, you could say the commission, you know, the commission wasn't probing that either. You know, the commission owned some of this problem too. Right?
Well, they may, but the fact is, I don't know what the law says or the regulations say. I assume when you apply for a license for something like this, you are supposed to disgorge any relevant information. If a huge shareholder and the wife of the owner, former ex-wife of the owner, knows that you have engaged in a $7.5 million payoff in response to accusations that you raped an employee, that's probably relevant information that she chose not to share with them. Is that not a fair statement?
I don't know the exact. I don't know what the commission is asked for. I don't know if they ask for, I don't know if they've asked for everything or they just ask for financial shenanigans.
There's also one more thing. Somebody said to us yesterday, I forgot who it was, and I was in a good mood, so I was not impolite, was saying what a great job the investigators at the commission have done. The Wall Street Journal is the entity that ferreted out a lot of this, not the commission's own investigators. Yeah. So, I mean, in any case.
Says something for great investigative reporters, doesn't it?
It does.
The hearings are over, and we expect in the next week or two there'll be a determination, yes?
I don't know if it's going to be the next week
or whatever,
or two.
Some period of time.
Talking to Shirley Young from the Boston Globe. So there was this is a great story. A modest house in Needham.
Oh, my God. What a story.
Three bedrooms, two-car garage. Hadn't been renovated, apparently, in many years. It was owned by Peter Brand, Harvard University's legendary fencing coach, and his assessed value was $549,300 when it was sold in 2016 for nearly $1 million. What happened?
So the buyer turns out was trying to get his son into Harvard on the fencing team. And this is an incredible story by Josh Miller.
It's great. Story.
Because I guess the target is a Mr. Zhao, right? He had multiple interviews.
He flew up from Virginia, to talk to the reporter.
Right. So Zhao is very, well-to-do businessman, sold his tech company for many millions of dollars. I think he had one older son at Harvard already on the fencing team
And
then his younger son was applying. Now his son is super smart, straight A's, you know, high test scores, brilliant. And Zhao, is trying to explain that, I wasn't trying to buy my way into Harvard. You know, I think one of his lines was, if I were trying to do that, I wouldn't have put my own name on the house records. This was just an incredible story because because Harvard has not been part of the scandal.
Yeah.
Yale has, but not Harvard. And also another incredible part of the story is that Harvard didn't know about it until this week, informed by the Globe.
Did you know your fencing coach had this unusual real estate transaction with the father of a member of the fencing team? And then the kids didn't know either,
well,
right?
Well, so they say.
So they say, right.
By the way, but I mean, again, they paid hundreds of thousands of dollars above market
price. That's right.
Price.
He sold it for a $324,000 loss.
They never lived in the place. He said he did it because he really admired Brand, the coach. And my favorite part is the reason he did it is because the commute from, where is it, Needham? To Harvard was 12 minutes long or something.
No.
What did he say?
12 miles. Which
12
could
miles,
be an
I'm
hour.
Sorry.
Come on, need him to Cambridge.
12 miles, my apologies.
That's right.
It could be a difficult
Because the commute was so untenable,
arduous.
He decided to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars more. And coincidentally, shortly after that, his kid got into Harvard. You know what the takeaway from this story is, in my estimation? Is, you know, everybody's saying thank God for Andrew Lelling for outing this thing and doing the U.S. attorney. And Josh Miller in this story, he says at the end how he got the tip from somebody who just Googled how weird it was, a potential buyer who didn't buy and saw this huge differential between list price and the purchase. You leave the story saying, yeah, how many others of these there must be that just haven't been discovered that are under the radar?
Right. And did you notice on our website, we have, tell us, do you have any tips on admissions scandals? You know, click here. And so I hope we get more. But, yeah, this was an incredible story. You know, when you're reading the story, I don't know if you got the feeling, but you're reading the story and you're like, wow, there's all this stuff about the real estate. You know, it's all about the real estate, down to the Needham assessors. Like, what is going on here?
What was his notation? Makes no sense
or
something?
Yeah, something like that. And so, and then you find out the end, we got tipped off because of a potential buyer looked at this, and they actually put two and two together, and then we chased it. It was an incredible story.
It is a fabulous story, and good for Miller.
Well, tragically for us, we spent so much time talking about pot, we didn't get into a bunch of the other stories, including my obsession with Uber and Lyft dropping people off in a garage.
Do that next week. I'm into it, too.
We'll do it next week, because Nair has never has an idea been so so thoroughly pounded.
Well, it was our most widely read editorial last week.
This is the notion rideshare is going to drop you off at Central Park, and then you walk with your kids and your luggage to the terminal. That'd be great with your kids, wouldn't it be?
Yeah,
fabulous,
that'd be great.
Right?
Especially if it's snowing out, raining out, especially if, you know, they get their drag their own suitcases.
People are like,
why
don't you? People wrote in, because I was on Greater Boston talking
about
this.
I heard.
And people were like, why don't you just get the. You know, get the smart card. I was like, I have to pay $5. Now I have to pay $5
to walk to the terminal.
Yeah, I don't think this is going
to
last. Anyway,
Shirley,
thank you very much
for having me.
Thank you very much. Sorry we didn't get to everything else we were supposed to talk about. Shirley Lang is the Boston Globe's interim editorial page editor. She joins us every week. Thank you, Shirley. Coming up, Jeff Bezos' divorce renders his ex-wife the fourth wealthiest woman in the world. Callie Crossey joins us for that and more next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan live from our GBH studio at the Boston Public Library. Joining us, as she does every Friday, is the host of Under the Radar with Callie Crossley, which means it is Callie Crossley. Callie, it's great to see you.
Great to see you, Jim. Great to see you, Marjorie.
Great to see you too, Callie.
Before we start, we've been giving updates all day on Joe Biden's first public appearance. He spoke at the Electrical Workers Union. He made a joke about how he'd gotten permission to hug this guy. I think his name is Lonnie, who is head of the union. He made a second joke about hugging a child there, saying, by the way, he gave me permission to touch him. Lucy Flores, who was the former assemblywoman in Nevada who ran for lieutenant governor, who really started this discussion recently when she said he came up behind her at a campaign event, put his hands on her shoulders, kissed her on the top of the head, smelled her hair. Here's what she just tweeted 49 minutes ago. It's clear Joe Biden has not reflected at all on how his inappropriate and unsolicited touching made women feel uncomfortable. To make light of something as serious as consent degrades the conversation women everywhere are courageously trying to have. So I guess at least for one person, the answer is our question about how his behavior today is playing with the public. That's Lucy Flores at her Twitter account.
I'll be talking about his behavior along with Justin Fairfax's behavior in an elongated conversation with the fabulous Koa Beck, who is a Joan Shorenstein fellow and the Me Too commentator on the Takeaway program.
Fairfax is the lieutenant governor of Virginia.
Virginia.
Yes. You want to give us a hint?
There's a lot to say. There's it's a lot to say about, whether or not, because Mika Brzezinski has been of Morning Joe has been saying, well, it's inappropriate touching doesn't belong in Me Too. That is just not true. And as I say, that's the gateway to the next step and to the next step. And just because it didn't happen to you, said woman, and you like him, other said women, does not mean it didn't happen to other women. And that we who do like him, I'm not saying I don't like him or like the guy, can't have to set up and address this. This is, inappropriate is inappropriate. And I just happened to me. The other day I was at an event, a celebratory event with people, most people I did not know, a few people I did know. I stuck my hand out to introduce myself to a guy. I don't think you think I'm a shrinking violet. This is how fast this stuff happens. And the guy says, oh, no, I'm a big hugger. And he just ran into, I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Now, so you have a choice. Do I make a big scene? I could have decided not to. It was, but really, I'm thinking to myself, somebody less, feeling that they have can be on top of their agency. What situation did that put you in? Not to mention young people and other.
I totally agree.
Come on.
Well, he doesn't. This is disturbing that he keeps thinking he needs to ask permission, because then it puts the person in the position of saying yes or no. I mean, just don't touch them.
Because of the power imbalance,
exactly.
Obviously.
Just don't touch
them.
Solve
the whole problem.
It doesn't touch them. And if you're in a situation where it's clear that there is communication that would be okay for physical touch, that. But, I think as Koa says, a lot of these guys don't know what consent looks like. That's what the problem is.
I'm suspicious of a lot of these hugs, though, Callie.
Yeah,
I'm sure you are, too.
Yes.
We know why they're hugging.
Absolutely. And I've been in that situation.
One more thing about this. Yeah. The thing that's driving me nuts about this whole situation is defenders. It's fine to defend him if you want to defend him.
Of course.
To defend him by saying he's not Harvey Weinstein. No one's suggesting he is Harvey Weinstein. And to say, yeah, but President Trump is worse, which is likely true, that's neither of the issue.
Yes.
The issue is Joe Biden's conduct.
Right.
Is it acceptable or is it unacceptable?
Yeah.
That's the issue.
In defense of myself, I said before that I think there are people who are looking at this and thinking, look at these PC Democrats. Can they talk about anything else? Mm. And I think that may be even coming from some Democrats. So I don't think
that's
a ridiculous
thing to point
out. Well,
you know what I would say in response to your thing? Mm-hmm. Joe Biden, don't make jokes about it in your first public pronouncement, and then we won't talk about it.
I think he thinks that he had to this is what I'm worried. I'm not in his head, but I'm wondering if he felt like I have to respond in some light way because of President Trump's editing of that tape. With the whole thing where he has his hands.
Trump
on Joe.
Tweeted out a video of Biden essentially harassing Biden.
Yeah,
is what he did.
Right, and then said, "Oh, this is welcome back, Joe."
We're talking to Callie Crossley. Mm-hmm.
So, Callie Crossley, we talked about this the other day about this weird question on the MCAS, talking about what would happen to kids answer a question from the perspective of a white woman who was using awful language toward a runaway slave, and it's based on actually a terrific book, The Underground Railroad.
By Colson Whitehead.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. What'd you make of this?
I was, as Colson Whitehead responded, appalled and disgusted.
Yeah.
I don't, well, who
what
was
were they
thinking? Yeah, that doesn't even make any sense. It just tried to put myself in the place of one of those students thinking, what am I supposed to do here? Wherever you are, whether you are a person, a student who is a student of color or not, what were you supposed to do in order to answer this that in a way that would get you, presumably the reason you're taking the test, some good marks?
That's exactly what they said, that the students were confused. Should they use racist language themselves, mm-hmm. and what racist language should they use, and should they use the N-word, or would that be inappropriate, or was that what they were supposed to do to show that they were in the perspective of this racist white woman?
Right.
So the whole thing, it is, they have taken it out.
But why, how did it get there? This is my thing. They say they have a panel that it goes through with regard to sensitivity and diversity. Who saw that and thought that was okay? And then they have another panel of just in general looking at the questions. I just don't get it.
Well, by the way, by mistake, they sent it to the insensitivity committee.
That's what I guess that's what it is.
Getting in the thing there. We're talking to Callie Cross. You know, Callie, you brought to our attention a story I'd not even read about. About this white woman in Quincy who said that she, well, let me read it. A black male in his early 20s who was bald, clean shaven, and was wearing a black hoodie, blue jeans, and black shoes assaulted me. And the story's in the paper, and a writer for The Root, Michael Harriet, makes the case that it evolved into sort of Jussie Smollett East in that it was all phony.
Right.
She had made up the story. The cops realized this right away. But he goes on to make a really important point. He says things like, when is she going to be charged with the 16 crimes that Smollett was until they were incredibly dismissed?
Right.
But much more significantly, why are police not releasing
her name?
Her name.
Right.
What do you make of this?
I make of it with the same kind of horror that he makes of it. It's just really, it's really bad. And it reminded me of the case in South Carolina. You remember a long time ago with the mother that killed her children in the car and then blamed all the black men?
That's not Smith, is it?
Yeah,
that's
Susan Smith. I couldn't think of her name.
Who put her two little children in the
car,
back of her car and drowned
killed them,
them
and said,
that was
you know,
awful.
Right.
Blame black guys.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. And everybody believed it, you know. And, well, we can, right here in Boston, because I know somebody's saying, hello, right here in Boston, Stewart.
Exactly.
you know, Stewart.
Yeah, yeah, so.
And remember what happened, there were police going through Mission Hill.
Stopping people.
Stopping all these young men who had done
Willie Bennett
absolutely nothing
was arrested,
wrong.
Don't you
they
remember,
were black and they were 17 or 18. And, you know, Willie Bennett supposedly had an Adidas outfit on. Like who knows how many other people had on.
But wait a second. The issue, I mean, that's horrible. There's no question it's horrible. But the issue that befuddled me, why do we not know the name of this woman?
I don't know.
Who I think on its face committed a crime.
Yes.
I don't understand.
I don't know what happened to her either. We don't know what the response is other than, you know, they found out she was lying. Nothing seems to happen. I don't know what that means.
And the point this writer makes, referring to her as Ms. Jussie Smollett, which I thought was fairly clever, that it's a variation on the same theme, just
it
on the East Coast
is.
And a different gender and a different race.
Yeah.
And why is she not being treated the same way that he was treated?
Well, I would say this is a good follow-up story because one of the original reporting was done by WHDH, and so maybe they're doing some follow-up.
I bet they will follow up, and let's hope the newspapers follow up on it, too.
Yeah.
So Jeff Bezos is divorced.
Yeah.
And in the settlement,
almost, right?
Yeah, I guess almost.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. You have to wait a while or something. They've got a settlement.
Well, yeah, they've got a few other things that work out, too.
They've got a divorce settlement, and it's going to leave him 75% of the company, the Amazon stock. He'll get, and she's going to get... leave him, 75% of the Amazon stock and voting power. Mm-hmm. She's going to wind
100%
up,
of the voting power, I believe.
Yes, and she's going to wind up with 4% of the company worth $36 billion. Mm-hmm. He's going to retain the remaining 12% of the company. So I don't know what to make of this. Is this a fair split up, or is it not a fair split up?
I want to make of it that, you know, she helped build that company. And, in fact, you know, when he quit his job, which was referenced in a commencement address he did, you know, she was still working. So she birthed 4 kids. I mean, I that's worth $36 billion right there as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I don't feel she'll squeak by.
Yeah, no, but in all seriousness, this has always been portrayed as he's given her something. I just want to clear, he didn't give her a daggone thing. She earned it.
They came up with it together in the car,
exactly.
Yeah. Thank you. And then she worked with him at the beginning. So what I make of it is that she sat down and decided, this is the best way for me to ensure that I can take care of my children and myself and get rid of this guy who's been flaunting his affair with Lauren Sanchez all over the place. And, you know, this is what I think is fair. Remember, she still is probably going to get many of these houses. They haven't figured out who's going to get that. And also they have some other holdings in various companies like Airbnb, which I imagine would bring a pretty penny too. She gets some of that. So probably in the end, maybe she has 40, 45 billion. I don't know.
But he keeps, by the way, one of their assets that he keeps totally is the Washington Post.
Right.
Yeah.
But, and you know, and so, and as this article makes clear, it felt like a very careful rollout of the decisions that they made with regarding to how they would do the split. And of course it was, because there's a lot riding on it more than their personal thing. If, you know, the companies were hanging like, oh God, who's going to be in charge? And what does it mean to have divorced people fighting over the company? So to be settled and to make sure that stockholders feel good, here's who's in charge, here's what's happening. I just don't want it lost that he didn't give her anything.
Okay.
She earned it.
Thank you.
So, Kelly, okay. Before you go, okay. You answered a question in a commentary about the effort by the Trump administration to include a citizenship question.
Yeah.
That I think, you know, often in a lot of these things, they're not people of goodwill on both sides. Yeah. I've spoken to a lot of people of goodwill who are on the other side saying, why shouldn't we know whether someone is a citizen or not? We're not saying we should take away their rights that they have or whatever benefits the government might give them. But you answer, I thought, quite clearly and directly why there is a really negative impact of even having this question. Could you explain it to those people?
Yeah, it's the way that it's set up. First of all, they didn't take very long to work this through. So that's the first thing. I mean, if you're going to do some variation of this or whatever, at least be thoughtful about what you're going to do. This was just slapped on there. This is obviously an agenda for a lot of folks. And as I've said in my piece, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross insisted, no, it was him, it was him. And now we have emails that document, no, it wasn't him. It was folks from the Trump administration who directed him to do it and do it just the way they said. But it frightens a lot of people. It makes it, it's hard enough to get people to count themselves, and we need to have everybody count it just so that we know who's absorbing the resources, who's here, where are they in the country? Why does it make a difference to know how many people are in Montana as versus how many people are in Massachusetts? And this is also targeted, as Ayanna Pressley has said in the only way that she can, at immigrant-rich states. In other words, states that have a lot of immigrants. This is targeted right for them, because if we can get them scared enough not to respond, then that means there's fewer resources coming to the state. And it could also mean, in the most drastic fashion, that it determines some undermining or undercutting of how many representatives represent that state. So this is about, you know, the numbers determine who represents the state, how many people represent the state, and how much money comes to each state for, you know, with federal resources. It's not a small thing. But in the larger scheme of things, we just need to know who's here. Let's know who's here.
And ultimately, it can be resolved by the Supreme Court quite clearly.
Yes, it's going. Well, they're making it. Two federal judges have already weighed in and said the question is unconstitutional in some variation. So now the Supreme Court is going to weigh in on it. That doesn't make me feel good, because, you know, I don't think that's something they want to pay attention to in a close way that I would. But
by the way,
we'll
one of those two courts, if correct me if I'm wrong, also said Wilbur Ross was lying.
Yes.
It's not just your opinion.
Oh, yes, that is correct. Let me quote him, because he was so good. He said he went out of his way say a judge said he was in a cynical search to find some reason, any reason, to justify the citizenship question. So that's what I mean about this was not any thoughtful, let's think about what we should do. This was just like an agenda setting thing. Let's see if we can get Massachusetts on its knees and a few other places.
So what are you doing Sunday night, other than what you told us about already?
Yeah, so Coa Beck is starting off the show with a reflection looking at both these recent cases, but putting this in the context of the ongoing reckonings of Me Too, what does it mean, what does it say, blah, 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 things we should be paying attention to, what are we missing. The second part of the show is a fun one for me. I discovered that there are a lot of authors who are retelling the story of Pride and Prejudice, but in different cultures, different times. So I have gotten two of the most recent ones to talk about why they decided to reset this classic story, 200-year-old story, in different cultures and in contemporary times. And it's a real fun conversation. There are more retellings of this story than you can imagine.
Oh, it's such a great story.
It's fabulous.
Do you have a favorite Pride and Prejudice?
No. Well, I am reading so many new ones. I mean, it's just, what's so fascinating about it, some people have never read the original. They read these and say, oh, I should go see what the original one was. So it works on all fronts.
Great. We'll be listening. Yeah. Kelly, thanks
you very
so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Kelly Crossey joins us every week. She is the host of Under the Radar with Kelly Crossey. You can see it every Sunday night at 6 o'clock on WGBH radio at 89.7. And she is the host on Friday nights. Are you the hosting tonight, Basic Black, on at Basic Black, which is on at 7:30 on WGBH Channel 2. And you can also see her on Beat the Press right before that with Emily Rooney. Callie, thank you very much. Up next, it's time for our Friday News Quiz, the Spring Cleaning Edition with two certified KonMari consultants. This is 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio, live from the Boston Public Library.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy. She's Marjorie Egan. We are live at our GBH studio at the Boston Public Library. It's time to bust out the boxes, fold yourself in thirds, and if your radio doesn't spark joy, please wait until our show wraps up before you donate it to the Goodwill. That's because it's time for our Friday News Quiz, the Spring Cleaning Edition, with two certified KonMari consultants. We're joined by Kerry Adams and Phoebe Cusack. Nice to meet you both. Thanks for being here. Carrie's a certified consultant. We'll tell you what that means in a minute. You can learn more about her at thesparkofjoylifestyle.com. Phoebe's a certified consultant. You can learn more about her at sparkjoyboston.com as well. Great to meet you both. Thanks
Great
so much for being here.
Too.
Okay.
Thank you.
For those who have not heard of this cleaning revolution, how you can change your life by reading Marie Kondo's book and following her instructions or watching her show. It's on Netflix, right? The show's on Netflix?
It is. Mm-hmm.
Start with you, Phoebe. Who is she and what does she do?
So Marie Kondo is a Japanese tidying consultant. She had a big business in Japan helping people sort of put their lives and belongings in order by choosing according to the singular category of whether or not something sparks joy. And she wrote a book and sold 3 million copies here in the U.S. And turns out that doesn't make you famous until you have a Netflix episode, which you know came out in January.
And you guys are consultants,
right?
So what does that mean?
It means that we go into people's homes and we help them tidy their houses using the organizational process that Marie Kondo designed, which is based on the Spark Joy method of intuition mm-hmm. to decide whether you like an item.
You're making it sound like you just go in because you feel like doing it. You were the, I read the 12th certified Marie Kondo consultant ever. Is that not correct, Curry? First
correct.
In Massachusetts.
Right.
So what do you have to go through to be certified?
You have to go through, I went through her first training program in New York City, where it's a three-day seminar where she teaches you her method and she teaches you how she wants you to work with the clients. And then in order to get certified, after you complete that program, you have to KonMari your entire house.
And we know each other because we were in the program.
We were both
KonMari
in the first one.
Is what KonMari. The verb is. That's what
I was saying. KonMari.
It's okay. KonMari. Sorry, yep. I got it wrong. Okay.
Yep.
And then you're certified and you can go out and do this.
No, then you have to go through people's houses.
Oh, you do.
You have to do.
It's all this training hours.
50 hours of training hours, and then after that, you have to pass a test.
And so what do you test by doing what? By doing on-the-job kind of thing? Or
no,
like a written test?
No, you have a written test online with Marie Kondo.
So did you go to friends' houses and KonMari their house? What'd you do?
So to do my test, my testing hours, my practice hours, I reached out to my friends and family members and said, is anybody interested in this? And surprisingly enough, a lot of people were. And so that's where I started. And eventually they sent me to other people and had clients. And,
okay.
And by the way, you
okay.
should say both these women had serious careers.
They had serious careers.
In other
that's
parts
right.
of the world when you decided
but,
to
you know,
do this
But you know, when you
thing.
See this, the first one, the first Netflix show, I think it was an Asian couple. The husband was into baseball cards. And the woman had like five houses full of Christmas decorations. But it was so weird because they seemed fairly normal. Mm-hmm. But then you walked into the guy, well, you didn't walk in, but you saw on TV, you go into the guy's bedroom, and he's got baseball cards like 18 feet up with these huge
What's wrong
ceilings.
With that?
They were everywhere. Well, you have a little hoarding tendencies.
Well, maybe I do.
Jim
maybe I
could
don't.
Use, can you use your methods on someone's car?
No, please, Marjorie.
Jim,
my car
I
is
mean,
my.
It is really.
It's
it
a
is
little
gross.
Cluttered.
But But the thing is, she's very non-judgmental.
Yes.
And even though the woman had the tackiest, ugliest Christmas decorations everywhere, she said, I'm into Christmas. And you thought, wow, you really should talk to a psychiatrist. Marie Kondo doesn't say those kind of things.
No, in fact, it's one of the things I really love about the show, yeah, is that, you know, this isn't about judging people, right? It's about really everyone, working with everyone where they are, right? And people call us because they are overwhelmed by their belongings. They're trying to do something about it, and they don't know what to do, right? So what I really appreciate about Marie Kondo is that she is so non-judgmental, right? This is about helping people. It's about, you know, meeting them where they are. It's not about saying, oh, well, that's not my style, right? Because styles change, and, you know, they may not be your style of Christmas decorations, but she liked them.
She loved them.
You know what
she
I mean?
She loved them.
And by
she
the way, you know, one of the things we do, when you ask them to explain for the three people who don't know who Marie Kondo is, the Spark Joy thing, to be more literal, the whole notion when I was first introduced to it was you literally hold the item, do
yes.
you not? You look at it, you said, does this spark joy? If
yep.
it does not, you thank it. Is that not correct?
That's correct.
Yes. And then you dump it, and if it does spark joy, you keep it. Is that not what
That's
you do?
That's exactly right.
Well, I'm ready for this.
And you know
thing.
What's brilliant
okay.
about that? If you're a guilty person, and I'm a guilty person, it eases some of that guilt.
Yes,
to,
that's the purpose.
Because you thank...
Because the shirt will understand.
You're talking to your socks, and you're saying, thank you very much. You've kept my feet warm all
you
these
have.
Years, and I'll see you later. And you don't
okay.
feel so bad.
So we want to hear more about this, but let's start the quiz. Is that fair? Who do you want to
yeah.
start with?
Okay, do I have my quiz?
Uh-oh. You do have your quiz, Margaret.
I hope I have my quiz, but I can't find it, Jim, so you should start.
Okay, well, I will start. I'll go across the aisle. Phoebe, I'll start with you, and then you can do Curry as soon as you find your quiz, which will probably be never. Here's the first question. A wealthy suburb of San Francisco is suing 86-year-old resident Florence Fang because they say her home is a public nuisance and an eyesore. What is unusual about her home, Phoebe? A, it's a replica of the Flintstones home, complete with dinosaurs and a giant Yabba Dabba Doo sign in the backyard.
Okay.
B, it's a replica of SpongeBob's Bikini Bottom home, complete with a statue of a starfish wearing swim trunks. Or C, it's a replica of the Boston Public Radio studio, complete with a statue of Jim Browder eating Brussels sprouts out of a tiny Tupperware. Is it A, B, or C, please?
I don't think it's C.
Well, probably it should be, but it is not, yes.
So I would like to go with A, please. The
ding, ding, ding. A new product hit the shelves this week, and America is teetering on the... Oh, that's the next question. The answer is A. You were right. Congratulations. Did you find your quiz?
I'm hoping that someone's going to print me another quiz.
Well,
I,
then,
I
Curry, I will do my best Marjorie Egan imitation. Are you ready?
Right.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
A new product hit the shelves this week, and America is teetering on the brink. What is it? A, Kraft has released a fat-free version of Velveeta cheese called Sveltvita. B, Nabisco has released a spinoff of the Oreo called Morio, a 16-ounce container of cream icing which comes with chocolate dipping wafers. Or C, Heinz has unleashed Cranch. It's a marriage of ketchup and ranch dressing. Is it A, B, or C to tie this game up, Kerry Adams?
I'd say B.
Well, you would be wrong. Now, you have a chance, Phoebe, to take a huge 2-0 lead. Is it A or C?
A or C. A was...
Velveeta became Sveltvita, or it's Cranch. Which is it?
Oh, geez. Velveeta.
No, that would be wrong.
So okay, I'll take C.
No, it's a little late. Thank you very much. C would have sparked joy, by the way.
Oh,
Marjorie,
yes.
You know what I'm
going to
do? I'm going to hand you my quiz. By the way, for those who are not here at the library, mm-hmm. one of our colleagues walked in about 10 minutes ago, handed me a copy of the quiz.
Molly's got
handed
me
Marjorie
one.
A copy of the quiz.
Yep.
And Marjorie's incredibly did not spark joy.
I know.
And she
well,
got
you know,
rid
this
of it.
Is this is why I really need my the condo.
Yeah, I think you need
condoizing because I lose everything. And what you do
what
realize,
a shock that
I
is.
Mentioned before we went on the air that I did the condo method for my closet.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Long to short. And this has saved me so much time in the year I've done it because I know that my shirts are going to be over on the right-hand side and my coats and my long skirts
fabulous.
And pants. So it saves you endless amounts
well,
of time.
Well, obviously, it's gotten you much more organized,
closet.
As evidenced by the well, fact you lost the quiz in 30
not,
seconds.
But I think that it's very hopeful. I feel
okay,
very
fine.
Hopeful about my future.
I do, too.
If I do more condoizing. Anyway, we're on question number 3, correct?
You're going to do the next 2 to even things
okay.
out.
This is question
1-3.
It's
1-0 Phoebe at the end of one
okay,
round.
Okay, so we're back to Phoebe now, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, here we go, Phoebe.
Yes.
Police in southern Poland say they are investigating 4 English-speaking tourists spotted last week in the historic city of Krakow. What were they doing?
Okay.
A, they were caught walking through the picturesque Renaissance Market Square and getting into a horse cab while wearing only lime green mankinis as worn by the famed Borat. Okay. B, the four men fell into a ball pit and, with their considerably girthy waist, needed paramedic assistance to escape.
Okay.
That's B. Or C, the tourists visited the city's Happy Place Museum and forgot to take any pictures for Instagram.
Well, A, B, or C?
I don't think it's C. They don't like naked English speakers. How about A?
A is correct. Very good. Very good. They said they're investigating the indecent antics, and if convicted, the men could face up to 30 days in jail or fines of $1,300 each. So there you go.
Unfortunately, I have to ask this question. Marjorie just lost the second copy of her quiz.
No, I didn't.
That was a joke. Okay. Marjorie, go ahead.
All right.
Question four.
Okay, question number four. Here we go. The following are all real headlines from the week, but one of them turned out to be an April Fool's joke. Which one was the April Fool's joke? A, John Lewis says he's growing a beard so people stop confusing him with Elijah Cummings. B, Donald Trump says wind turbine noise causes cancer. Or C, dropped hyphens, split infinitives, and other thrilling developments from the American Copy Editors Society conference. Which was an April Fool's joke?
A, B, or C? No lifelines. Just go for it.
B?
Say A. Say A, because we want you to stick
A.
A is correct. Very nicely
correct.
Done.
John Lewis said, my decision to grow a beard comes after years of baldness. Press reports that have confused me with Congressman Cummings, and that's why he
Before we go to the bonus round, I have a couple of questions here. One, have either of you ever met her?
Who?
Like Marie Kondo?
Yes,
she taught the course?
Yeah,
part
she
of it.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
How exciting was that?
Oh,
it
yeah, and then we went on a retreat with her last summer.
Can I come on the next one? You're kidding me.
Yeah.
So what is she like as a human being, face to face?
Unbelievable.
What do you mean by that?
She's just the sweetest, nicest, most energetic person. She just vibrates. She
very
just exudes...
I love that.
She's absolutely lovely.
Okay, so the only thing I don't like, Marjorie has been talking me into this because I am a little bit of a pack rat, I would agree. Okay. However, one thing I do not like at all is I was reading, I think I saw...
Excuse me for a second. Just let me tell you, you know, the occasion that Jim might offer me a ride home, it takes quite a few minutes for me to get into the car because there's so much stuff in the passenger seat. I think that's fair to say.
By the way, can I tell you why that's unfair?
Like it's piled
last
up
time,
by 3
that's
feet.
Totally, last time when the car was full and there were a lot of things in it, I told you could go on the roof. And like Seamus, Mitt Romney's dog. You could
that's
just go out there.
That
no, but here's
option.
The thing that I didn't like at all. When she was talking about throwing out books, and by the way, neither Marjorie or I are into that at all, she said if you don't want to throw out a book and there's only one passage of the book, correct me if I'm wrong, that you like, you should rip out the pages in which that passage is, save that, and get rid of the rest of the book. I mean, that's so creepy to me. Phoebe, am I wrong about that?
You are.
I am wrong, Curry?
Yeah, you are.
What does she say about books? That was a myth?
Yeah, she used to do that in
oh,
the
she
beginning.
Used to do that.
That was one of her things
What's her
before.
New thing?
Just to read the passage and remember it.
Oh, and then
let
get rid
go.
Of the book.
I recommend,
let the book
go.
What
I
do you recommend
my you? Clients take a photo. Maybe
oh, that's
they
a thought.
Take a nice picture of the page or something. If the whole book doesn't spark joy, then and it's taking up too much space.
Well, the spark joy is just a great thing. And it does, I mean, I feel so much happier about my closet. I really do. The
that's
rest
good.
Of the house is kind of a mess. But the closet
gotta
is
keep
not
going.
Bad. Yeah, you
got
to keep, I have to keep
if,
going.
Wait, what if somebody likes our show, but it doesn't spark joy? Is that enough, do you think?
They can't donate your show.
That's an excellent point.
You.
So here's the bonus round, you two. Curry Adams, Phoebe Cusack. Know that the... KonMari method requires a special folding technique.
Yes.
But while they know how to fold, what do they know about foldee? Is that right how you pronounce it? Judges. Thank you. Okay, fine. This week's bonus round will quiz our guests on the Hungarian weightlifter. Oh, Imre Foldee. He's a five-time, this is he really exists, I'm told in my ear, a five-time Olympian during the 60s. And 70. So, Marjorie, your first question
by
is
the way,
to Curry.
I also do the folding thing with like underpants and T-shirts and socks, and that's another life changer.
It's unbelievable.
So much easier to see your stuff.
It's
in
so
the
much
drawer,
easier
right?
to see your stuff in the drawer. It's really amazing. Okay, here we go.
This
so,
is for
we'll
Curry.
Mix it up. So, I'll start with Carrie this time. Ready, Carrie? Question one. Foldee went to work at age 17, and don't worry, everybody gets these things wrong. At age 17, after he lost his mother in World War II, but his job helped him get noticed for his strength. What did he do? A. Operated heavy machinery at a dairy plant. B, worked loosening rock in a mine, or C, ate a single potato chip without eating the entire bag, a nearly superhuman show of physical strength?
A, B, or C?
B.
You are correct. He worked loosening rock in a mine.
Who are you looking at that's giving you great advice?
That's my husband.
He's really?
He gives the greatest advice.
What the hell does he know about M. Ray Folder?
He's a trivia king.
Oh, he
knows everything.
Okay. Look at him over here. Okay, question two. I think it's tie judges now. Is that right or not? That is correct. It's 2-2 there, Phoebe. Your chance to break the tie. Foldy set a world record at the 1972 Olympics. I'm sure you knew that. How much did he lift? He lifted, this is Imre Foldy. He lifted a little more than 832 pounds. He lifted about 1,000 pounds.
Oh, my God.
He lifted, this is really incredible. See, he lifted U.S. sanctions against North Korea, Iran, Syria, and Venezuela. Is it 832, 1,000, or all those sanctions? Which is it?
What kind of lifting was it?
It was whatever lifting you want it to be.
Oh,
so is
okay.
It A, B, or C?
I think it's A.
Ding, ding, ding.
Correct. Very
that
good.
That is very impressive. Now, do you want your husband to come closer for this one? Because this is for all the marbles.
Okay.
What's this guy's name?
Mike.
Mike, come a little closer.
Mike.
Can you do it? How are you, Mike? Nice to see you. stand near your wife, and you can whisper, because this is for everything. There's a huge prize at the end of this rainbow. It's the final question for Kerry Adams. Go ahead.
Okay.
And Mike,
Kerry
her
and
husband,
Mike.
Who's
here.
Sort
we
of
go.
Here. Yeah.
Foldy retired after setting 21 world records and 15 national records.
Of course.
What did he do next?
Mm-hmm.
A, he fought for better safety protocol in Hungarian mines.
Yep.
B, he coached his daughter to a European championship in weightlifting. Or C, he started a successful rideshare company, Lyft, which went public last week.
Now, don't answer right away. Now, you want to whisper to Mike or have Mike whisper to you. That is perfectly permissible. Look at each other. Well, very closely, like you're doing now. They're talking back and forth. This is very exciting. It's like a real quiz show. She could say, what do you think?
Yeah.
He's answering what he thinks. I know this is unfair, Phoebe, because you didn't bring
anybody. I didn't bring my husband.
But it's okay. So have you two worked out? Because the show is over in 3 minutes,
okay.
If you know what I mean.
B.
Okay. Okay, so you're satisfied
B.
with your answer here?
B.
What is your answer?
B.
Kerry.
B.
All right.
Now, who do that, you or Mike?
He coached his daughter to the European championship.
Mike is going to get the prize, sadly. Kerry, not you.
Now, Jim's car is right across the street.
Exactly.
I actually want to stop in and look in the window.
I actually was hired to Kamari somebody's car.
That's
you were?
Not true.
Yes, Jim.
And what did you do?
Emptied out the whole car, put everything on the ground, and sorted through it
If you're willing to do that, we can talk after the show. The only thing is the mushrooms that are growing in the back, I'd like to preserve them.
Yep.
Can you do that?
Yes.
Because they do spark joy in me. Is that fine?
Yep.
Now, the only criticism I have of the whole program is that if you have to take out every piece of clothing.
I love that
That's going to take you days.
Days.
Can't you do a little bit at a time of the clothing? You
no, that doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
Yeah. The overwhelm is part of the process.
The overwhelm is part of the process.
Right.
The couple I mentioned before, the guy with the baseball cards up to the ceiling.
Is, mm-hmm.
When she brought all her clothes, it was from her bed to the ceiling.
That's right.
Oh yeah, that's right.
It was
unbelievable. Yes, yeah. I have actually recently had a client whose kids
Phoebe.
Got to roll down her pile of clothes. They had a great time.
Let me tell you something.
So you're struck by the excess of it too.
But it doesn't work if you don't take it all out because it's the process of taking it all out and making the big pile that lets you say, "Wow."
Okay,
this is what I'm dealing with. And in fact, when I was a new consultant, I worked with a client where I let them sort of do a little bit at a time.
Didn't work.
And it really didn't work.
You know, when this
got to stick to the method.
When this
method
radio
does
thing
work.
Dries up, which could be any day now,
I think I could do
we
it,
could
Jim.
Be doing this kind of thing.
But you have
know?
To finish your house first.
I do. Yeah, that's a good point. It's great to meet you both.
Thank great
Mike,
to
you
me.
As
thank
well.
You.
Thanks
thank
for being
you very
here
much,
thank you
guys.
So much.
Kerry Adams
Let's
and Phoebe Cusack
our
are certified KonMari consultants. You can learn more about Kerry Adams at the Spark of Joy Lifestyle.com. Phoebe Cusack is a certified consultant. You can learn more about her at SparkJoyBoston.com. Thank you again
Thanks
very
you
much
too.
For being good
you.
Sports and coming in. And thank you, excuse me, for listening to another edition of Boston Public Radio. Thanks to the people that came down to the Boston Public Library. It means a lot
thank
to us
you
on
all.
Monday. We'll have our political roundup, Charlie Sennett on his latest global headlines, the Reverends Irene Monroe and Emmett Price and All Revved Up. I want to thank our crew, Chelsea Murs, Amanda McGowan, Tori Bedford, Arjun Singh, our engineer, John the Claw Parker, Molly Boygon, who got me my second quiz. Thank
Molly,
you very
thank
much.
Thank you so much for helping
our
us today.
Our on-site engineer is Ron Milton. Special thanks today to Molly, as I already said, and also thanks to the people at the Newsfeed Cafe. We don't have to talk about what's on television with you. What are you laughing at?
A little disorganized. No, it's fine. It's just
and
fine.
I'm a little disorganized. I need the KonMari method to get my life in order.
Maybe
maybe we could do something about papers at the
By the way,
station.
I will be taking a lift back to Cambridge because I can't fit in my car. So that is a problem. Marjorie, have a great weekend.
You have a great weekend, too. Emily Rooney's tonight, 7 o'clock, Basic Black, 7:30. Jared Bowen, 8:30, Open Studio. Thank you very much for listening. Have a great weekend, and please tune in again on Monday.
See ya.